provides public defense services to eligible people. The agency is projecting a $7,853,000 shortfall in the funds needed to provide services for the remainder of this biennium. While the number of cases is in line with what the agency had projected during the 2005 session, the nature and complexity of the cases, including more death penalty cases and appeals, and recent court decisions are requiring more attorney time and therefore increased costs. In addition, the need for interpreters has increased substantially. Only half the funding is recommended at this time due to the current size of the General Purpose Emergency Fund. The amount of the General Purpose Emergency Fund will increase for the November-December meeting of the Emergency Board as special purpose appropriations which have not been used will revert to the General Purpose Fund. It is understood that the agency will need to return to the next meeting of the Emergency Board or the 2007 legislature to receive the balance of the needed funds. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objection? Item number five, Department of Education, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board allocate $3,009,549 from the Emergency Fund reservation established for caseload growth in the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program. The Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program serves children with disabilities and their families. The objective of the program is improving developmental status and increasing school readiness for each child. The EI portion of the program serves children from birth through age 2 and is state mandated. The early childhood special education component serves children from age 3 until the age at which schooling begins, usually 4 or 5, and is federally mandated. The Department of Education contracts with education service districts to provide the services. During the 2005 legislative session, $4.9 million was established in a special purpose appropriation for increases in caseloads. The agency made a request and was granted the entire $4.9 million special purpose appropriation at the October 2005 meeting of the Emergency Board. At that time, they presented data showing caseload projections that increased substantially over the caseloads that had been anticipated in legislatively adopted budget. The department explained that the $4.9 million would not cover the entire need, given the new caseload data, and we returned to a later Emergency Board meeting with updates on caseload data and available federal funding. Updated caseload projections now show growth of 4.6% per year from 2004-2005 caseloads. The department has determined that the federal funds projections that were used during October and June are still valid and have not changed them. The current funding level is $6,856 per case over the course of the 2005-2007 biennium. That is $167 less than the funding per case for the 2003-2005 biennium. The request amount would bring the funding back up nearly to the 2003-2005 level. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objection? Item number six, Department of Education, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board defer the request to approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Education in the amount of $5 million for the Effective Behavioral and Instructional Support System. The Oregon Department of Education is seeking retroactive approval from the Emergency Board to apply for a federal state personnel development grant. The grant will not only add agency staff and requires no state matching funds. This grant will be used to fund staff training in schools and education service districts related to using a systematic approach for matching behavior to the core academics. The agency is currently piloting this program, and this grant will allow them to move further with the program and implement it faster. The agency applied for the grant on July 24, 2006, which was the deadline for submittal. They notified leadership of the application on August 16, 2006. Agencies are required to provide a 10-day advance notice to the President and Speaker when applying for a grant. If timing prevents the Emergency Board from reviewing the request. In this case, ODE did not provide sufficient notice of their intent to apply. The agency has had some turnover in strategic management's positions, which resulted in a misunderstanding of the proper procedures for grant requests between Emergency Board meetings. The legislative fiscal office has discussed the situation with the agency, and they have apologized and stated that they have no intentions of letting it happen again. The education subcommittee had a discussion related to the decision and the timing of the decision made by ODA related to a virtual charter school. A motion was made to defer the request in order to send a message to the department. The education subcommittee recommends deferring the request.
Discussion?
Madam Chair, may I?
Representative Clark.
If the Chair and my colleagues would indulge me in some collegial license, I'd like to spend a few moments explaining why I asked for this to be done yesterday. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm the Chairman of the Board of Oregon's first virtual online public charter school that offers a complete curriculum. We operated last year a fully funded, operated with 700 students last year. It was our first year. We were chartered slightly before we passed Senate Bill 1071, as you recall, in the waning days of the 2005 legislative session. Last year we had, like as I mentioned, 700 students. This year we have, as of yesterday, 1,293 with over 500 more applications of students who wish to be enrolled that we'll process sometime in the next couple of weeks. The reason I ask this to be done is because the Oregon Department of Education notified us precisely about 2.5 days prior to the beginning of our school year that they were cutting our money off. In fact, I have their letter right here. Now, this was unnecessary. It was unwarranted. It was arrogant. And that's why I've asked to send a message to the department to not engage in this type of improper activity. They could have very easily come to us and said, we have concerns about a couple of areas of your both your lottery policy and your enrollment requirement in requiring a parent or a legal guardian be a coach. Our charter school operates totally online. We have real teachers that are paid union scale. They're in the public employees retirement system. They communicate with the child on almost a daily basis. The parents at home are critical, a critical component to ensuring that the child finishes their lessons. This is part of what the entire concept of online learning is about, is accountability to create an educational opportunity for a child that doesn't feel comfortable in the traditional bricks and mortar school setting. So, 2 days before our school year begins, we get a notification that we have no money to operate. That, I think, was improper and totally unnecessary on the part of this department. Now, this just doesn't affect me. In fact, in the room, we have a couple of parents. Representative Hannah's daughter is enrolled in our school. Representative Esquivel has two granddaughters enrolled in the school. And every single one of you, members of this committee, have constituents, children, that are enrolled in Oregon's Connections Academy. The purpose of me asking you to join me in deferring this request, it does no harm to the agency. The grant has not been approved. They will need to come to us according to their narrative and ask us for approval to spend that money when it is approved. However, I think you ought to take note of the fact of their timing and the way they've handled this. Our consultant is in the back of the room. Our principal, Jim Thomas, is here. I myself, all three of us, pleaded with the Department of Education to talk to us if they had concerns prior to this letter coming out. My friends, it is not right for an agency to act in this manner. What would have happened had we chosen to file the injunction that I signed the paperwork for to go to court the following day in circuit court to force them to release funds to us? What would have happened if that would have been not granted to us? We would have had no money. We would have had to operate on our reserves. We were scrambling to find money that we could borrow to continue operating. What would have happened if we hadn't had those reserves? We'd have been out of business. What would happen to one of your charter schools if the Department of Education acts in this manner towards one of yours? We'd put them out of business. Most charter schools don't have our numbers of students, and they don't have our deep pockets to work from. Part part of what I consider, and I'm not going to speak for the rest of you, but I consider my oath of office is to enforce the laws of the state of Oregon, is also to serve people. And I don't know how allowing an agency to act in this manner serves the people that I represent or the people that you represent. And I'm asking you to join me in approving this request to defer the funds, to send a message. Now, I'm not confident that that message has been sent or that it means anything to the Department of Education. Because as late as yesterday, I asked a friend through the back channels to the Department of Education to ask them if they would be willing to state for the public record that they believe we're grandfathered in exchange for me dropping this issue. And you know what their response was? We're not too worried about what Representative Krupp's doing. Now think about that. Is that an arrogant statement? It's an arrogant statement as far as I'm concerned.
It's an unacceptable statement.
It is. So, my friends, I just really believe that in the future, and I'm asking you to take note of this now because our situation with them is not resolved. We had a meeting with them. We agreed to their demands, and we have done so. We have a verbal agreement. We have received nothing in writing from the Department of Education at this point. I will not be here at the next e-board meeting when this issue, if you choose to join me in deferring this request, it will be back before you at the next meeting. I will likely be in Afghanistan with the Oregon National Guard. I'm going to rely on you and ask you to pay attention to this issue and to please be cognizant to see if it has been resolved prior to their request to have the approval of these grant funds. With that, Madam Speaker and colleagues, I thank you for offering my explanation as to why I've asked you to do this. I know it's symbolic. It is totally disconnected from this request, but I think it's appropriate that we try to send a powerful message to the agency is act more appropriately in the future. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, as the chair of the committee, I would have appreciated earlier notice of this before yesterday morning. However, I do have to say that Representative Krupp came to my office, I did not happen to be there, and spoke to my staff before the meeting and caught me right before we started the meeting and explained what he hoped to do with this. I do believe that the committee, in considering this item and discussing it, literally every member of the committee, even those voting in opposition to the motion, expressed some concern about the timing of the notification to the academy. The vote in the committee was 3-2-0, and I will intend to vote no today. I believe that the Department of Education has heard the message that Representative Krupp wanted to communicate. The dollars that are involved here, which are actually in all reality not impacted, are dollars that go directly to your school districts to provide for training of teachers in various aspects that are important in the conducting of their classrooms. This is kind of a strange item in what we are talking about is approval of a retroactive submission of a grant application. So delaying that decision until November has no practical impact given the fact that the grant has not been awarded. But as a matter of course of process, I did not believe it was the way to proceed on this. I'm not naive enough to know that things in this building sometimes don't have to be associated for there to be a connection, that sometimes messages are sent. But I believe in this particular case, it's not the appropriate way to address this particular issue, and I'll be voting no.
Further discussion, Senator Curtis?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I totally agree with Representative Krupp in terms of the mishandling of the situation. After, say, 18 years of being on Budget Committee and E-Board, I'm just wondering if this is the process, the means, avenue by which we should send the message to them. I'm willing to sign on to a letter with you, Representative, and everything else to get things done, but I'm not sure we should use the e-board for this kind of a situation. If I'm wrong, I stand corrected, and I'll see, ask our administrator if there are times when we have done something like this and used this means by which we send a message to an agency. May I please ask this?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, Senator Devlin indicated, messages are often sent in various ways to agencies. I don't recall a situation like this happening in the past, but that, again, doesn't preclude you from doing it in this case.
Well, that would be my only concern, Representative Krupp. I don't mind making a telephone call. I don't mind writing a letter, because I think it is absolutely inappropriate. What the department has done. But right now, I'm feeling that I don't think this is the avenue by which we should do it.
Further discussion? Representative Smith?
Thank you. Co-Chairman, this question for staff. If we choose not to defer, then the only option before this committee is to take no action. Or am I missing something?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, somebody could make a motion to approve retroactively the request if that was the will of the committee.
Isn't it precedence for this committee, though, to send all of our work through the subcommittees? And to have those discussions down in subcommittee, not here at the full board.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that has been the tradition, is the work is done in subcommittee. And there have been rare instances when the full board has overturned a subcommittee decision. It is not a common practice, however.
Thank you. Thank you.
Further discussion? Madam Chair. Senator Gorley?
Thank you. In her comments, Senator Carter suggested an option for action, and that is a formal letter expressing concern about the process. I would be happy to participate in that way, a letter of concern, a letter of protest, however it's expressed. I think that option, it makes sense to me as a way to proceed.
Madam Chair, can I have a question, staff?
Senator Winters?
If we defer, what are the implications for the grant funding? Are there any?
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, as Representative Krupp mentioned, and I think Senator Devlin also mentioned, that there is really no effect on the grant itself, because the grant has already been submitted and it's in process. This is just the request was for retroactive approval for the submission of the grant. So the grant will still be in play. If a decision is made, the agency would have to come back anyways, probably at the November-December meeting of the emergency board. This request limitation to spend the funds. If the motion is passed and the item is deferred, then at that time they would just ask for, again, retroactive approval to apply and limitation to spend at the same time.
Madam Chair, if you will have that response, follow-up. Well, I think the letter to them signed by us is really the strong approach. And, you know, I too would agree to sign a letter supporting that we're outraged.
Further discussion? Senator Devlin?
Madam Chair, I know that there may be some disagreement between Representative Krupp and I on this issue, but I would say that in terms of my statement yesterday, my statement was not relative to the department enforcing what it believed were the requirements that it's actually charged to enforce. My statement was to the effect that I regretted that they chose the timing that they chose, that they put a public institution in this type of position, which would have been a difficult thing for any school, charter or a traditional. traditional public school to be notified a couple of days before the start of school that they would not be receiving funding.
Yeah.
The timing is the issue that I objected to. If they had known this in advance of this, they could have communicated it well in advance of 2 days before they started school. But it was not an objection to them trying to enforce what they are required to enforce under state and federal law. I'll just leave it at that, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? We have a motion before us. I think we're going to require a roll call vote, and I'm unclear how this is going to turn out. So, roll call roll.
Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Morgan?
Yes.
Representative Smith?
Yes.
Representative Cupp?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
Yes.
Representative Hammond?
Yes.
Representative Boone?
No.
Representative Barker?
No.
Chair Mills?
Yes.
Senator Schrader?
No.
Senator Carter?
No.
Senator Westland?
No.
Senator Gordley?
No.
Senator Winters?
No.
Senator Devlin?
No.
Senator Morris?
Yes.
Co-Chair Courtney?
No.
Our motion fails.
All right, item number 7.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry that it went on. What I'd like to do at this time is to make a motion that a letter be sent to the Department of Education discussing our disapproval and outrage at the action for the last minute notice to this academy, and would ask them in the future that some kind of arrangement be made so that timely issues of this nature will not put us in the position in which we are now, and I'd like that to be done by the staff and the committee.
I'd like to second that motion.
Okay. Representative Morgan.
The other issue I think that's outstanding here is the fact that the department didn't timely notify this process that they were making the application for the grant. So I'm wondering if you would consider amending your motion to put language in there reflecting this body's dissatisfaction with them not complying with the procedures that are expected of them that are very well known.
So received.
Senator Courtney.
I was just discussing with the co-chair that perhaps the two co-chairs could officially, or that it could be drafted, it could be signed by the co-chairs or the emergency board. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's acceptable.
Totally acceptable.
Just pick and choose.
Totally.
I'm
only checking with staff.
But I just.
That's a question.
Question.
Madam Chair, Senator Courtney, yes, we can certainly do that for you. I would also suggest to the motion that you would include making a retroactive approval of the grant also, because right now it's sort of in limbo because you have denied the deferral. So you
so accept it.
Thank you.
Just restate that.
I think the motion now would be to send a letter strongly encouraging the department to communicate better, to also abide by the notification of leadership of grants in the future, and to retroactively approve submission of this grant.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I support Senator Carter's initial motion to send a letter. I have deep concern, though, about breaking precedents. This is a body that prides itself on process, and that process begins in the subcommittee. And so I would encourage that we send this issue back to the subcommittee to let them work through it and to bring it forward at the next D-Board.
Representative Hannah and Senator Carter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comments were germane to those thoughts that I'm very supportive of the letter, but I would not like to see the motion include both the letter and the retroactive approval.
From parliamentary procedure, Madam, this is essentially a motion to bifurcate the motion, which has just been moved to have be amended to have two portions, and now it's being asked to be separated.
gentlemen and ladies, is that we don't want to totally abdicate a great responsibility to our children, that even though they were late in notifying Representative Crop, we still want the money so that in the future Representative Crop and these lovely parents and children out here could still benefit from the money. So we don't want to cut off our nose to spite the face. We want the money to still come, even though the process was one that we're questioning. Question to Representative Crop, please.
Let's start to answer a question.
Restate the question, please.
The question is, if we would not send them permission to reapply for the grant, these dollars could be lost, and in the process, you would not in the future receive dollars for the academy.
Senator, that really isn't the scenario that's before us. The motion having failed doesn't preclude that the department can come back and ask for permission again for us to have received the grant. Is that not correct, staff?
Madam Chair, Representative Cup, yes, that's correct.
So they can still come back. They've already made the grant. We're waiting to hear, Senator, if they've received granting from the federal government. They will need to come to us and ask us for expenditure authority to spend that money once it's granted to them. And that's actually, Senator, why I chose this particular issue rather than one of the other issues, because it really does no harm to the agency.
If they would not ask permission, doesn't it delay the time period in which for them to have to wait 2 months from now to come back and ask permission, and again, that could delay the process in another way?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, actually, technically, I guess there's no difference right now. The grant would still be being processed by the federal government, and they would come back. If it was awarded before the next emergency board meeting, they would come back at the meeting and ask for retroactive permission to approve again and limitation. So.
Senator Winters and Representatives.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe I might have an acceptable solution to this. First of all, to state for the record, the Department of Education was one of three agencies that had failed to meet the deadline of notifying leadership. And actually, the subcommittee chairs had a pretty extensive discussion of that the day before the subcommittees met. And all of us agreed to make fairly strong statements in our committees, which I did, that we didn't want to see this practice repeated. I think a way to resolve this, which should not cause us any consternation and get us onto the many items we have on the agenda, is in that letter to do everything that we've said, that to express concerns about the timing, express concerns about the notification to leadership not being on time, and to say that it's the decision of this body to defer action on this item until the November e-board. That's, I think, basically what staff needs, actually, is they need some action taken on the item, and deferring action until the November meeting is the action. And
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I just want to say thank you to your to all of your sensitivity to the issue and willingness to sign the letter. Thank you very much.
With that statement of deferring action, and with the letter, Madam Chairman, that's strongly written, because I do believe that they need to be sent a message that this body, and I get a nodding of everyone around this table, is outraged by their action. And it's one that we would not encourage for any agency, let alone the Department of Education. So with the deferral to the November e-board, it puts it back, that message. But in the letter to them, I would also recommend that letter is strongly written.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate the leadership of Senator Devlin, and I support that statement.
So the motion before us is that we submit a letter to the Department of Ed.
Point of order. I would think that what we have is Senator Devlin is offering a friendly amendment to Mark Carter's motion. And then if that's accepted, then...
It is accepted. Any objection? All right. The motion before us is that the leadership sign a letter to the Department of Education reminding them that there is a timeliness and a proper order to do this kind of thing, and then to defer in that letter and state that we are deferring this action until November. Is that accurate? Any objection?
Madam Chair.
Senator Schrader.
So, in fact, we have just reversed our previous vote. I just want to be clear on that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's correct.
For different reason.
Okay, then I will object, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Any other objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. I'd like to recognize today some very special guests that we have in the full Ways and Means Committee meeting right now. Associated Oregon Counties does a training program for people that are involved in local governments. And we have today members of the first county college class, and these are commissioners and judges and county staff. We very much appreciate you taking the time to come before us today, and we appreciate the interest that you have in increasing your skills on the operation of government, and I'm trusting that it will serve you very well. Madam Chair, we had a delegation of these folks come before the General Government Subcommittee yesterday and make a presentation to us on the authorization of the Secure Rural Schools Fund, which is an issue that all of us are aware of that's going on in the federal government right now. All of the members of the committee have a package of information before them that gives a great deal of information about the impact of this bill on our individual counties and on the state as a whole. So I urge you very much to take a look at this package of information. And we're going to be asked to support a resolution in the next session. We'll take that up at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wilson.
Colleagues, this is critically important, not just to Oregon, certainly, but many states. But as we reside here, it is incredibly important to Oregon. We're talking close to $500 million in total revenues this state spread between the general fund, road fund, and most importantly, the school fund. Through the good offices of NCSL, National Conference of State Legislatures, I and Gil and many people were able to shepherd through a resolution to Congress urging the reenactment. And as of this juncture, it is stalled. But there is a likelihood it will be extended for 1 year. I believe that's the current status. And it is just incredibly important based on the initial representations of management yield and revenue from our national forest lands that these monies continue to flow to the state of Oregon and these vital services that we all depend on so much. At the end of the day, this is one of the most critical things this next legislature will be doing, and I appreciate all of your efforts in this cause, and thank you very much for being here.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, I think it's ironic that they're participating in the county college, knowing how talented each and every one of them are. It seems as if we ought to be attending the college with them to learn about their services, because I'll tell you what, they're key partners in the delivery of what we're trying to accomplish. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Any other comments? Welcome, and we certainly look forward to working with you next session. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If I may revert back to the previous conversation.
Just a suggestion,
because this is a chronic issue of retroactive approval. It seems to come every time we meet. One thing that could be kind of self-limiting on the part of the agencies is when they make these approval requests, in all cases, they provide us the date on which they received notice of the opportunity to make the grant request. And that, by and of itself, will tell us how much attention they pay to what we ask. That will be self-limiting, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. I would defer to Seth. We already have a procedure in place that deals with that. Most of the reports that we get will indicate whether or not they've submitted the request in a timely manner as to prior to coming to e-board, or because the approval or the grant came up after we left Dodge and they have to give us to the leadership. Would Seth like to comment on that, please?
Madam Chair, Senator Morrison and Schrader, there is a process in place, and I think one of the problems is adequate communication of that to agencies. We continuously try to indicate to agencies what the procedure is, and in most cases, agencies do comply with it. And the process is that you provide in writing 10 days before you intend to submit the grant application, a notification by a letter to the President and the Speaker with a copy to the Legislative Fiscal Office. And because of the timing mechanism in some grants, it is just not possible for them to come to the emergency board for approval. During session, they come to the Ways and Means Committee, and so we don't accept retroactive grants during session, or we have discussions with the agencies. And in doing an analysis of the request, one of the things we typically ask them is, when did you know about the grant? And so usually we try to put that information in our analysis so that that information is available to you. But we can redouble those efforts if you'd like.
Senator Courtney?
You know, my fellow legislators, President Cook, Senator Morris, Devin, Corley's, and Carter, always been involved in what's going on. This, to me, this is my opinion, is a classic example of why this legislature needs to be in this building more than a few months every 2 years, because the Speaker and I have created legislative oversight committees, but they're interim committees. We do have the e-board, but the only way to truly deal with administrative agencies in terms of these kinds of gripping discussions is the legislature has got to play a greater role in state government than does today. And I know that's going to stun some people. I'm not talking about a full-time legislature, but I don't know how else to deal. You can deal with processes and procedures and e-board, but there's got to be more life in the legislature every year, so that administrative agencies understand that we mean business, and they're going to have to come before us as a legislature at least once every year. I'm not talking about a full-time legislature. I just have to say that, because this is a torturous exercise we've just gone through here for about half an hour. So thank you. That doesn't help anything except let me say something.
So, Senator, would you support an ongoing administrative rule review if they have to come in every 8 years?
No. Legislative office, legislative out of office.
Thank you, Senator.
I'm in frustrated.
Thank you, Senator. Item number 8, Department of Higher Ed. I'm sorry, I crossed 7 off. I thought we were done. Department of Higher Ed, Senator Schrader.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. The Education Subcommittee recommends Emergency Board establish and other funds capital construction, Article 11F bonds, expenditure limitations for the Oregon State University College of Veterinary Medicine, the Large Animal Hospital, and transfer $7 million from the existing other funds capital construction, other revenues, including federal funds, expenditure limitations established for the same project, to the newly established expenditure limitation. Last session, the Legislative Assembly approved a $12 million capital construction project to expand the Veterinary Medicine Large Animal Teaching Hospital at Oregon State University's Magruder Hall. The project supports the expansion of OSU's Doctor of Veterinary Medicine program to a full 4-year program by providing additional facilities for the treatment of large animals. The project was to be financed entirely by gifts, but only $5 million of the gift funds have been raised to date, and additional facilities must be completed by the end of next year to accommodate the phased expansion of the Doctor of Veterinary Medicine program. The department is requesting authority to use $7 million of Article 11F bond proceeds in lieu of the gifts to complete the project on schedule. Debt service and bonds will be financed primarily from recently received endowment fund that a donor established for the College of Veterinary Medicine. The university will delay the start of the project pending the results of the 2006 general election. State Treasurer has indicated that if Measure 48 passes, he will consult with the legislature and the governor before proceeding with any further bond sales. Since this project cannot be completed without Article 11F bond proceeds, the university will delay the start of the construction until a certain bonds will be available for it. Your Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Discussion? Objection? Item number 8, Representative Scott, Department of Higher Education.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds capital construction expenditure limitation established by the construction panel of Phase 1 of the Oregon Institute of Technology Center for Health Professionals Facility by $1 million. Last January, the Emergency Board approved an $11.2 million project to construct Phase 1 of the Center for Health Professionals Facility on the OIT campus in Cape Falls. The project was to include laboratories, classrooms, and faculty offices, and was designed to provide space to support a 420-student increase in the campus's health profession training programs. The department underestimated the construction cost of the project and is now requesting that a total expenditure limitation for it be increased from $11.2 million to $12.2 million. Material costs have increased by more than expected, and due to labor shortages, subcontractors have to bring workers in from other areas at added expenses. OIT reviewed the potential changes to the facility plan to keep the cost within the existing expenditure limitation, but the needed cutbacks would make it impossible to expand enrollment capacities as much as needed. Instead, OIT proposes to only a modest 1,000 square foot reduction in the faculty's facility size. The remaining facility would be sufficient to support the program expansions, but would still cost $1 million more than authorized. The additional $1 million in construction costs will be financed entirely by gifts. There will be no need to increase the tuition rate differential charged to students in the health profession programs beyond the levels originally planned. Your education subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Discussion? Objection? Item number 9, Department of Higher Education, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board establish a $27 million Other Funds Capital Construction Article 11F1 Bonds Expenditure Limitations and a $6 million Other Funds Capital Construction, which is other revenues including federal funds, Expenditure Limitation for the Research Stadium Expansion Phase 2 Project at Oregon State University. The Department requests authorization for a $33 million capital construction project to expand and upgrade Research Stadium at Oregon State University, to construct a new weight and strength training facility, and to purchase a new stadium video board. This will include demolition and reconstruction of the south stands of Research Stadium, the addition of 3,500 seats to bring total seating capacity to 46,800. The stadium renovation also includes new ticket windows, concessions, and restrooms, a new entrance gate, and relocation of the visitors' locker room from Gill Coliseum to the stadium. A new weight and strength training facility will be constructed across from the Valley Football Center. The project will be funded from a combination of $6 million of gifts and $27 million of Article 11F1 bonds. Debt service on these bonds will be paid by the university from a combination of donated funds, advertising revenues associated with the new video board, rental revenues generated by the stadium's West Suites, and a small portion of endowment income. Payment will not rely on any increase in game attendance. The university will delay starting the project if Measure 48 passes in November. The treasurer has indicated that he would consult with the legislature and governor before proceeding with any further bond sales in this case. Since this project cannot be completed without Article 11F bonds proceeds, the university would delay the start of construction until it is certain that bonds will be available for it. Madam Co-Chair, your Education Subcommittee recommends approval of this request.
Discussion. Senator Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Yes.
Do you really think this is needed? You're still going to lose to the Ducks.
Oh.
Questions.
Oh.
Is that your question?
That was it.
Right.
No further questions.
Yeah. I was wondering if they're going to change their turf to blue because they seem to have trouble playing on that as well.
Okay, moving right.
Oh, not sure.
Who's the national champions in baseball?
Madam Chair.
OSU.
OSU.
I don't think the questions were entirely rhetorical, and I think there are some teams that don't rely on divine intervention to win.
Oh, yeah! Touché!
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I bow.
Further discussion on the motion.
Further discussion is further suspended.
Any objection? Hearing none. Item number 10, Department of Human Services, Senator Gordon.
Agents of
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources, and Services Administration in the amount of $300,000 over 3 years to improve children's oral health. DHS reports that 56% of Oregon children aged 6 to 8 have a history of tooth decay compared with 52% nationally. DHS attributes some of this problem to the fact that only 20% of Oregon's population has access to fluoridated water systems. Further, this lack of access to a key preventive resource is particularly hard on Oregon's children of low-income households who have nearly three times more untreated decay than children from higher-income homes. To help provide preventive dental care treatment, DHS is proposing in its grant application to target children in certain elementary schools where at least half of the student population is eligible for the federal free and reduced lunch program. Using grant funds, DHS would contract with three limited access permit dental hygienists to provide dental sealant services to about 2,100 children. The grant includes a 40% match requirement, which will be met through in-kind services and existing public health general fund expenditures. While DHS did not provide legislative leadership with a 10-day notification of intention to apply for this grant, your Human Services Subcommittee believes the potential benefits to children merit greater consideration than this rule infraction.
Insurance.
We recommend your approval.
Discussion? Objection? Item number 11, Department of Human Services, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on the Oregon Health Plan waivers. The Oregon Health Plan is funded with a combination of state and federal Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program funds. As such, OHP operates under a variety of state and federal laws, rules, and waiver agreements. The current OHP-2 demonstration waiver expires on October 31, 2007. To renew the OHP waivers, Oregon must submit an application by October 31, 2006, 1 year prior to the expiration date. As part of its application preparation work, the Department of Human Services has submitted a report to the Emergency Board outlining three modifications to the current waiver that it will propose to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services when it applies by October 31st. The three changes are, one, extend eligibility for children eligible for the poverty level Medicaid program from the current 6 months to 12 months of continuous eligibility. The CHIP already contains this provision, funded in last April's special legislative session. Number two, reduce the eligibility requirement that a child be uninsured from a current requirement of 6 months to a shorter period of time to be eligible for CHIP and for Family Health Insurance Assistance Programs. Three, either increase or eliminate the asset limit for CHIP and the FEOP The current asset limit is $10,000. Department of Human Services indicates that these proposed changes will help it meet the goals of improving access to health care for low-income Oregonians and decrease provider cost shifts caused by uncompensated health care. The department states that if CMS approves these changes, it will not implement these policy changes without the 2007-09 legislative budget approval. Moreover, DHS points out that requesting these changes now does not preclude further requests of CMS to amend Oregon's OHP demonstration if the legislature and governor agree on other waiver modifications. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends acknowledging the receipt of the report.
Further discussion? Item 13, Department of Human Services, Senator Winner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on actions to improve Oregon State Hospital patient safety and care with directions. In January, the Emergency Board approved a request from the Department of Human Services to allocate $9.3 million from the Emergency Fund and increase the agency's federal funds expenditure limitation by $3 million.
What?
To take three significant steps to improve Oregon State Hospital patient safety and care. These actions are: 1. Undertake a capital construction project to remodel the sixth floor of the Oregon State Hospital facility in Portland. Hire 30 additional clinical staff at OSH. Develop 71 additional community-based residential placements. This requires 4 additional Office of Mental Health and Addiction staff. The Department of Human Services reports that remodeling work on the sixth floor of the OSH facility in Portland is on schedule for completion next April. The agency indicates that it has hired 23 of the 30 additional clinical staff at OSH and is continuing its work to attract skilled employees. DHS has a difficult time developing community mental health placements and is behind schedule. Because of these delays, DHS believes that it will not be able to reach an OSH direct care staff to patient ratio target that is part of the settlement agreement between the State of Oregon and the Oregon Advocacy Center. In a June 14, 2006 letter, the U.S. Department of Justice notified the governor that it would be conducting an investigation under the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act. DHS reports that it has contracted with 2 consultants who will assist the department throughout the federal investigation. The U.S. Department of Justice expects to visit the hospital later this fall. DHS will provide another report on patient safety and care at the next Emergency Board meeting. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receive the report and direct DHS as part of its next report to discuss the ongoing U.S. Department of Justice investigation and the ways the process of developing mental health community-based placement could be improved, and also provide us with the information on their efforts to recruit staff. Your subcommittee recommends the acceptance of the receipt of the report.
Discussion? Senator
Garley? Senator Weston. Madam Chair, I think along with every member of this committee as well, certainly the sub, are disappointed, I think, in the progress that is being made on this critical issue facing Oregon, in our inability to reduce the staffing ratios and make progress in the community mental health housing. This is unacceptable to me. This is an issue of critical importance, not just to Oregonians, which we certainly all are,
This is important because human beings are suffering unspeakable horrors. I can tell you from too personal an experience that this has got to stop. It is just wrong. And we as a committee, we as an institution, must redouble our efforts to ensure that the master plan is implemented on time. Not so we can say that from this dais, government efficiency, we did something better. No. We must do this to discharge our constitutional responsibilities, which is provide for some of the most frail and vulnerable citizens among us. It is wrong, and we must do better. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any discussion?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, one of the things we heard in subcommittee is that the Department of Human Services is experiencing there are great barriers to attracting good people to help us move forward. The barriers are low pay, and terrible working conditions. And until we address the issue of low pay, we're not going to get where we need to go. We've got to provide the authority to increase the salaries so that we can attract quality professionals into these jobs. That's a barrier. We're responsible for removing the barrier. And so when are we going to do that? The other thing that is very clear to the subcommittee, and again, we heard this in testimony, there are other barriers to our success. We're not attracting potential service providers who manage community mental health developments, and they are also having difficulty hiring qualified staff. Again, pay is an issue. We're having difficulty securing adequate and affordable housing, and in your LFO report, which you'll find under tab 13, page 13.2, they say that the third and most discouraging aspect of all of this is that several communities and their leaders have opposed the development of secure forensic residential facilities. The not in my backyard stance continues to be a major barrier. But despite the obstacles, we know that the Department of Human Services is continuing to do what it can with what they have to move forward. But again, the point that I want to make is that we've got to deal with the low pay issue. We're not going to make the progress that we need to make until we address that. Professionals are not going to come here from any place else to take these jobs until we address that piece. Also, I'll end with this, and it's also in print on page 13.2. The consultants who gave us the framework master plan, phase two, said this in their report. It is important to stress that for any of these options to be successful, the community-based program enhancements outlined in this report need to be fully implemented. Without the enhanced community programming, demand for OSH beds will substantially exceed projections of size and cost.
Madam Speaker, the President of the Committee and Oversight Committee of the Senate, for which I chaired, I'm in the process of doing a report that I will share. I want to share it with you as well, in terms of looking at the workforce issue. And if anybody else would like one, you can just call our office and we can send one, but we're still preparing it to talk about the conditions in the workplace as well as our inability to attract new staff and get staffing patterns. We had a group from Hillsboro that came, and one of the persons that was there had been out on leave because her caseload had gone up to 235 families, and that is too much for only one person to do. So it is a crisis, and this is not, and I want to repeat, it is not a political issue, and I wish none of us take it as a political issue, because the Speaker and the President have worked very well on the issue of mental health collectively. They have moved us forward more than anyone else has ever done, but at the same time, this is an Oregon problem. And so as soon as I get through with my report with the Administrator, I'll forward it to you as well as the President.
Thank you, Senator. You know, one of the issues, we talked about building a hospital. We need to work more on, not just on bricks and mortars, but the whole system.
Right.
We need to understand what the counties have to offer. We need a review of how many beds they have and how they partner with the state. I think we need a better understanding of that. Making sure we have an adequate workforce is another component of that. I think rather than, I mean, not just talking about rushing to build a building, we also need to have a comprehensive review of how this whole system is or is not working. And so I've asked the Senate President to join me in appointing a work group to look at the whole system. We have a group that's looking at fast-tracking a hospital, and I think that's important. But I also think we need a comprehensive review of what are we currently doing, what are the counties currently doing, and how can we improve upon the system. Identify what the challenges are, and then try to bring forward some recommendations that either a body can deliberate over and move forward on. So that's what I'd like to have happen. Representative Boone?
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I wanted to second that and also add that this is a good time to put in a word for continuing our support and prevention at the very front end and helping our families succeed. And it's something we can partner with the counties on that. They're already doing a lot of good work. And just so that you know, the Hospital Siting Committee may be finished with its big work on the two big pieces, but we're working on a community piece, and first meeting was a large group of people, barely fit in the room, and they're from all over the state, and I saw a lot of interest, and we were finished before we started, it seemed. We were just not enough time to do everything. So it's an enthusiastic group. I think we're going to find some new connections, new partnerships to solve this. But don't forget prevention.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Madam Speaker, the only thing that I can add is that the community-based piece, and we don't spend, I believe, enough time, and we will have to when we come back in on 7th, because you are correct, the bricks and mortar is one aspect, but the community-based piece, if that is not in place, when we will not be successful with the bricks and mortar piece, because it is totally a part of the system. And I want to share a little with you, because Senator Courtney knows I'm one of the states that have always had the reputation of being the leader in mental health treatment was my home state in Topeka, Kansas. And because Miniger's Clinic was there, and they're like you're talking about the Mayo Clinic. I went home for family reunion this year, and Senator Courtney called me, and I know he heard the distress in my voice, because the position that Kansas took is one that I said to him, I hope we don't take. And that was, they're going just the reverse of what we did, what we're doing here. And it is critical, because what they did was say, we don't have the money, so therefore we're not going to invest in community wraparound services. We'll empty out our institutions. And so what they have now is one-third on the street, one-third in jail, and one-third they provide housing for. And I'm getting a little emotional, because that is not the direction that this state should be going.
And I just want to give kudos to both of our leaders, Senator Courtney and Representative Minnis, for working together on this very critical issue. And with that, I would ask the body to acknowledge the receipt of the report on action to improve Oregon State Hospital patient safety and care.
Any objection to the motion? Item 14, Department of Human Services, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge the receipt of a report on implementing the Medicare D prescription drug benefit. Various members of the 2005 Legislative Assembly asked that the Department of Human Services report to the Emergency Board on a regular basis about implementing the Medicare Modernization Act. The most important provision of the Medicare Modernization Act is a prescription drug benefit that was added to the Medicare program, Medicare Part D, on January 1, 2006. DHS has provided implementation updates at every emergency board meeting this interim. DHS reports that some implementation problems remain, but that those problems are affecting fewer persons. Looking ahead, the most significant new MMA development is the upcoming open enrollment period, which begins on November 15, 2006. DHS expects significant changes to the prescription drug plans now offered in Oregon. There could be plan design changes such as formulary modifications or changes to the pharmacy network used by the plans to distribute the pharmaceuticals. The number of plans may also change. Clearly, there is some risk associated with these potential Medicare drug plan market changes. DHS will continue to operate its central hotline to assist clients and case managers in the event of problems. DHS will update the Emergency Board on Medicare plan changes and other MMA issues at the Board's next meeting. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of this report.
Discussion. Objection? Objection carries. Item 15, Department of Human Services, Representative Richardson.
Madam Co-Chair, the Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in the amount of up to $8 million over 2 years to improve Medicaid services. The objective of this grant is to encourage the adoption of innovative methods to improve effectiveness and efficiency in providing medical assistance under Medicaid. The grant requires no state matching funds or additional positions. DHS is finalizing its application and will propose five projects within the grant application. One, the development of personal portable electronic health records. Two, the enhancement of drug utilization reviews. Three, developing pilot programs to encourage community access to preventive services and treatment of chronic conditions, regardless of payer. Four, the focus on ways to improve the quality of health care to vulnerable populations. And five, continuing efforts to plan for Oregon's Medicaid long-term care system. The grant application was initially due on September 15th. However, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has delayed the deadline to October 2nd. Consequently, DHS is seeking approval rather than retroactive approval from the Emergency Board to apply for this grant. The grant requires no additional general fund or position authority. Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objection? Motion carries. Item 16, Department of Human Services. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, again, this is one of the movements towards improving our situation with the State Mental Health Hospital and moving forward on that task. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board for the Department of Human Services transfer $1,014,999 of other funds expenditure limitation from the Health Services expenditure limitation to the Capital Construction expenditure limitation and approve the establishment of three positions, and for the Department of Administrative Services increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $146,673 and approve the establishment of two positions for state hospital planning and design with instruction.
On February 28, 2006, the Department of Human Services released a report concerning the Oregon State Hospital entitled Framework Master Plan Phase 2 Report. This report contains analysis of the demand for hospital services for the next 25 years and presents three options to meet that expected demand. On June 9, 2006, Governor Kulongowski, Senate President Courtney, and House Speaker Minnis announced their support of the second option in the Phase 2 report. The proposal calls for the construction of a 620-bed facility in the North Willamette Valley, a 360-bed facility south of Linn County on the west side of the Cascade Mountains, and at least two non-hospital-level 16-bed secure residential treatment facilities east of the Cascades. The anticipated cost of the buildings is expected to be between $324 and $334 million. Legislative leadership appointed an OSH siting committee, which met several times throughout the summer. DHS and DAS are now requesting position authority and expenditure limitation to begin the detailed planning and design of the Option 2 facilities. Position expenditure and consultant costs will be funded with certificate of participation revenue. There will be no debt service for these certificates of participation during the current biennium. Debt service costs during the 07-09 biennium will be included in the governor's budget and are estimated to be $476,062 of general fund. This is the next step in what will be a lengthy process of Oregon State Hospital project management and oversight. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval of the request as modified by the Legislative Fiscal Office in its analysis. Moreover, we recommend that DAS and DHS regularly report on the OSH project to the Emergency Board, beginning with our next meeting.
Thank you, President Hannah. Any discussion? Any objection? Item number 17, the Department of Human Services recognizes Representative Hannah, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve the submission of a Federal Department of Health and Human Services grant application to increase community-based capacity for persons in Medicaid long-term care institutions. Oregon is well known nationally for its success in building Medicaid long-term care community-based capacity and reducing its reliance on institutions to provide care. It was the first in the nation to pursue Medicaid home and community-based care waivers, and it leads the nation in the percentage of long-term care clients who use community-based service options. DHS believes that certain populations in Oregon's long-term care system, now living, or those who otherwise would be placed in institutions, could instead live safely and comfortably in community-based settings. The grant DHS is seeking would provide an enhanced Medicaid match rate for 1 year to pay for the long-term care services for clients placed in community-based settings rather than in institutional settings. Some general fund savings are possible if DHS is successful. Savings resulting from the enhanced Medicaid match rate and savings from provider lower-cost community-based services. The grant application is due on November 1st. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Thank you, Representative Hannah. Further discussion? Objections? Item number 18, Department of Human Services recognizes Senator, Department of Human Services recognizes Senator Winters, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on implementation of the Department of Human Services Operations Review Team recommendation on cash flow and financial management. As DHS reported to the Emergency Board in June, the Operations Review Team examined the Department's accounting and budget processes, internal controls, banking and cash flow management. DHS has already acted on a number of the team's short-term recommendations. To date, it has added a deputy director for finance and realigned its financial services and budget staff, improved its personnel management practices, implement changes in internal financial controls and its check payment process, modified its forecasting procedures, and begun work on comprehensive plan for DHS financial and business functions. DHS is continuing to look at options to resolve cash flow problems. Some potential solutions are more general fund budget authority, a short-term working capital loan, changes in expenditure accounting, and long-term changes to improve internal operations and revenue flow. DHS next budget rebalance plan is expected to contain proposals to help it address the cash flow issue for 2005-2007. Its 2007-2009 budget request also has a policy package with a placeholder for cash flow and financial management improvements. Your subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item 919, Department of Justice, Senator Westcombe.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board allocate $994,819 from the Emergency Fund for legal costs related to the Defense of Criminal Convictions Program, with the understanding the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the funding to be released based on actual experience. The Defense of Criminal Convictions Program is a budgetary unit used to track and fund the legal cost of the Department of Justice in defending the state in cases where sentenced offenders challenge their convictions and sentences, or the adequacy of their attorneys. These convictions are generally obtained by the district attorney at the trial court level, but state law requires the Department of Justice to represent the state in the appeals and other defense of criminal conviction cases. Almost all of these activities are funded solely by general fund. The 2005 legislature recognized that the $10.6 million originally appropriated for this program was insufficient to keep pace with the growing number of cases. Since the legislative session, the rate of growth in the number of cases has increased, and the Court of Appeals has implemented a policy of limiting the number of days a case can be delayed for hearing, which limits the ability of the agency to meet their workload. Even with several actions taken by the agency to manage the caseload, the backlog continues to grow. The remaining major action the agency can take is to waive representation of some cases. The result will be that only defendants will be represented in the appeals process, and the court will have to invest resources to review the court record to decide whether the trial court's ruling should be reversed. Over time, this will transfer the cost from the Department of Justice to the courts. The subcommittee recommends an allocation of $994,819, which represents the funding necessary to continue existing cases that are at risk of exceeding the time limits implemented by the courts and does not address any new cases. Since it is an estimate, the subcommittee recommends requesting the Department of Administrative Services to release the funds as required by the agency. The subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Discussion? Objection. Item 20, Department of Justice, Representative Boone.
Oh, what number?
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm clicking away here.
The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board allocate $827,405 from the Emergency Fund for legal costs and protecting the state's interest in the Master Settlement Agreement payments, and to instruct the Department of Justice to report at the November-December Emergency Board meeting on the ongoing legal costs and continued legal actions. In 1998, Oregon and 45 other states signed the Master Settlement Agreement with major tobacco companies, producing an annual revenue stream for Oregon for over 30 years. Oregon is expected to receive over $200 million for 2005-07 and has designated that these funds be used for debt service on appropriations funds, bonds, and OHSU-related bonds, and the funding of the Department of Human Services. The agreement allows for a number of annual adjustments, one of which deals with the impact on the market shares of the tobacco companies participating in the agreement. Two of the three major tobacco companies reduced their April payments by approximately $9 million based on the adjustment for sales made in 2003. The third major company has indicated it may reduce a future payment. In August, a Multnomah County judge ruled on a tobacco industry motion compelling the parties to enter into arbitration. Similar rulings were made in a number of other states. Unfortunately, the ruling does not instruct the parties on the details of the arbitration, but the tobacco industry is pushing for a national-level arbitration. It may be months until rulings for the remaining states with similar motions are made, dragging out a final decision on the 2003 adjustment until at least 2007. The process for the 2004 adjustment has already begun. To date, the agency has not received any funding for these legal costs and has internally borrowed from other funds, which should be paid back by the end of the biennium. Costs through the end of August total $827,405 and represent internal Department of Justice costs and billings from outside counsel. Presently, the agency estimates total costs for this issue could total $2.5 million. The subcommittee recommends that costs to date be paid from the emergency fund and that the agency report at the next emergency board on its costs and the legal issues of the case.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Any objections? Number 21, Department of Corrections, Representative Smith, please.
Southside.
Okay, could we move beyond that and go to, let's do somebody, well, I'll go to that. Let's go to 22, please, Department of State, please.
It'd be difficult.
Okay, we cannot do that. Okay, let's keep moving.
Fine.
All right, that's what I was looking for, a signal. We'll now go Representative Susan Morgan. Would you take up 21, please, Department of Corrections, please? I didn't know.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board establish a federal funds expenditure limitation of $1 million for the Central Administration and General Services Division for the Prison Rape Elimination Act, establish a federal funds expenditure limitation of $205,000 for the Transitional Services Division for the Serious and Violent Offender Reentry Initiative Grant, with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule $921,896 in federal funds expenditure limitation for the Operations Division. In 2003, Congress passed the Prison Rape Elimination Act to prevent sexual abuse of persons who are incarcerated and to address related problems after the sexual abuse has occurred. One part of this federal act was to provide grant funds to states for implementing the requirements of the act. The Department of Corrections has been awarded a $1 million grant, which will be used to create a new integrated conduct management data system to collect and track information, increase security by adding cameras in key locations in two older prisons, and provide training to staff, families, and community partners. The Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology has reviewed and approved the information systems component of the project. The agency was granted authority to apply for this grant during the 2005 legislative session. In discussions with the agency relating to this request, $921,896 of the federal funds expenditure limitation was identified in the agency's operations division that is not required at this time for the first year of the federal state criminal alien assistance program. The subcommittee recommends requesting the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule this limitation until further information is available from the federal government on the second year's funding for this program. After the deadline for this emergency board meeting, the agency was notified by the U.S. Department of Justice of the award of a $450,000 grant relating to the Serious and Violent Offender Reentry Initiative. The agency was granted authority to apply for this grant at the January 06 e-board meeting. The subcommittee recommends establishing an expenditure limitation for the Transitional Services Division of $205,000 for the planned 05-07 cost of this initiative.
Thank you very much, Representative Susan Morgan, for stepping in. Discussion? Objections? Okay, now we go to item number 22, Department of State Police. Senator Carter, please.
Thank you. The General Government Subcommittee, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Representative, Mr. Co-Chair, recommends the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt.
Potentate.
I'm going to report on the number of vacant and double filled positions in the agency's financial status. As part of its approval of new positions area in the biennium, the Oregon State Police was required to report back to each meeting of the emergency board on the number of vacant and double filled positions as well as the financial status of the agency. As of August 9th, OSP has 26 vacant sworn positions and 33 vacant professional positions out of a total of 1,166 total authorized positions. After factoring in double filled positions and pending actions such as transfers, retirements, and ongoing recruitment, the net sworn vacant positions total 14, while there are 25 net professional vacant positions. OSP hopes to request a rebalance of his budget at the November meeting of the emergency board, as more up-to-date information is available on a number of outstanding issues. These issues include the changing price of gasoline, cost of the Supreme Court decision on overtime payments for managers and supervisory employees, and cost of the current fire season. At this time, it does not appear the agency will require further general fund resources, but it will likely need to transfer resources between divisions. I'd like to ask that the subcommittee recommends acknowledgement of this report.
Thank you, Senator Carr's. Discussion? Objections. Item number 23, Department of State Police and Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Recognize Representative Susan Morgan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on the progress of integrating the Oregon State Police's recruit training into the basic Department of Public Safety Standards and Training Police Academy training no later than January 1, 2007, and acknowledge a report on the Oregon State Police's planned use of lease space at Camp Riley. Over the past three legislative sessions, there has been discussion of integrating the recruit training for OSP into the basic training for all other law enforcement officers at DPSST. This was finally made possible with the opening of the new DPSST Training Academy in Salem this past summer. DPSST will increase its basic training from 10 weeks to 16 weeks in January of 07. Starting in February, OSP recruits will begin to attend the DPSST basic training. OSP will provide an additional 8 weeks of training for its new recruits before and after the DPSST basic school to cover OSP-specific topics. For many years, OSP has leased facilities at Camp Riley from the military department as a location for various training venues, including its basic recruit training. With the completion of the new DPSST Academy, OSP plans to terminate its current lease at Camp Riley effective October 9, 2006. Some of the specialized training venues at Camp Riley are not readily available at the new DPSST Academy or at other locations in the state. OSP has identified 15 weeks of specialized training annually where it plans to use Camp Riley facilities. Any net savings generated from the termination of the lease and the changes in the use of Camp Riley will be used to offset the cost of using the space at the new DPSST facility. OSP's training unit will be located at the new facility and will also have dedicated classroom space. The subcommittee recommends acknowledgement of the report.
Discussion? I think progress has certainly been made in terms of the cooperation between the different law enforcement communities. It is my hope that that as much as possible these entities will continue to use Camp Rhinea, because the important thing has been the military department has one of the most innovative and wonderful community programs going on with young kids in the inner city. These kids have never left the inner city community until the housing authority partnered with the military department to do this. So a lot of good things happen at Camp Riley. So I'm going to talk to former Senator John Menace and other State Department people to make sure that as much as possible they, you know, cooperate with Camp Raleigh to continue the resource funding for helping the military department to do it.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item 24, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, Representative Boone.
I'm ready.
The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training updating the status of curriculum development, final construction issues, and the move from the Monmouth facility. The Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, DPSST, has developed a new 16-week training curriculum with an increased emphasis on scenario-based training, use of force, pursuit driving, defusing hostilities, responding to persons with mental illness, first responders to acts of terrorism, solo officer response, gang recognition, use of lethal force, major accident investigation, and cultural awareness and diversity. This new curriculum will be implemented in January 2007. In addition, DPSST reported on the final construction costs, value engineering decisions, and various cost containment strategies employed to deliver the project on time and within budget. DPSST also reported on the final costs associated with the mover from the Western Oregon University campus in Monmouth to a new Salem location. $90,000 was allocated for an early lease termination cost, $15,000 was allocated for restoration of law enforcement memorial site and resurfacing of the concrete floors inside the main office complex, and $40,000 was left in a residual account designed to pay for facility maintenance and repairs. And we had a little discussion in our committee about the curriculum, and I'm very happy to say that I think we're moving in the right direction. So, subcommittee recommends acceptance of the report.
Further discussion? Chairman Morgan?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We discussed this issue at length with the final finishing of the building and the development of the curriculum, and I do think that it's worthy of note that the building was constructed on time and actually came in under budget, that an audit report found no deficiencies at all in the situation, and also that the curriculum development, there were a broad diversity of groups and stakeholders brought together to do curriculum development for the facility, and the process was very successful. So I think that this is a great example of the way that the people of the state of Oregon expect their government to operate, and I think we should be very appreciative of the department's efforts in this area.
Chair Carter.
Too many times this committee has to spank people and clean chairs of departments of administrations. This is one time that something so magnificent has happened, and Chair Morgan made a point of this yesterday. I really, really do think, as a matter of encouragement, that the co-chairs send a letter of gratitude to this department because, number one, they came in on time, under budget. Yes. Yes.
Take it home.
I mean, it is a notice. No, you guys, don't play. I'm not playing. This is very serious. Because when others go over their budget, we always send some kind of letter, and that's what I mean about spanking. Mm-hmm. And when one administrator does a good job of coming in on time and on the budget, I think that is deserving of worthy notation.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah. And the letter.
All right.
Who's drafting it?
No.
It's to further request.
I move that we send a letter to the department head who came in on time, under budget, noting them with thanks and gratitude for saving the state money and the citizens of Oregon who benefit.
We agree. Yes.
There's a motion before us. Is there any objection to the motion?
Madam Chair, not an objection. I think we do have a remaining challenge, however, and that is that although we're moving from 10 hours or 10 weeks to 16 weeks, and that's a good thing, we're still below the national standard, which is 21 weeks. So that is a remaining challenge. That's something to keep in mind as we continue to support the department's work.
And Madam Chair, Senator Morgan, that was noted on record yesterday. That the note on the record said that Senator, that the present director, when he was a member of the Senate, was willing to move these issues forward, but the legislature didn't have the money to move from 16 weeks to 22 weeks. All of that is on notice. The chair did a good job of us discussing this issue, and she's right, we did it at length. So, Senator Gordon, it is on record that it is our hope that we move from the 16 weeks training to the 22 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Further discussion on the motion? About a letter.
We're sending a letter, right? Well, that's done.
Is that okay with me?
I just want to add, in the years way ahead of my ever showing up here, the people who have pushed for increased training for the police in Oregon has been great. When I first police academy I went to was the Oregon State Police Academy in 1970. It was terrible. The training was totally inadequate. It was 4 weeks long, and we went back later. But I mean, it was just the teaching staff was primarily older members who wanted to say, I taught at the academy. They were not highly qualified. I'll just let it go with that. But the people who pushed it, I know Senator Gordley has been advocating for more and better police training all along, and especially having somebody like John Menace move from here and also from a long career in police enforcement in Portland over there. The Department of Standards, Public Safety Standards and Training has moved light years ahead in just the last few years, and I really agree that we ought to have that letter sent.
Yes.
I'm probably being overly sensitive. You know, just because you're older doesn't mean you can't teach.
If these guys had been young, they couldn't have taught. And the state police greatly improved their program right after that, too. In the next few years, they were moving on. But
I never thought of you as old, Senator. It's something I just...
Not old.
You've heard of AARP, haven't you? Yeah, not become a full professor at Portland State right here, African Studies.
Jeez. I've been an AARP member for 13 years. So.
Okay. Are you teaching?
Further discussion on the motion to write a letter and also acknowledge receipt of the court report. Any further discussion? Any objection? Item 25, Military Department, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board establish a federal funds capital construction expenditure limitation of $272,212 and transfer another $452,788 from the Department's 2005-07 legislatively approved operations budget for the construction of an artillery storage building and for compound improvements in the Department's McMinnville Armory. The project's total federal funds limitation would be $725,000. This project is related to the U.S. Department of Defense transformation efforts and was originally anticipated under the Department's operations budget, of which $452,788 remains unexpended. The Department reports that the project was reviewed with the Capital Projects Advisory Board and does not require state matching funds. The project is slated for completion by June 2007. This project will increase future operations and maintenance costs, approximately one half of which will be paid for with general fund. According to the department, federal fiscal year 2006 funding for the project must be obligated no later than September 30th, 2006. A delay past this date could result in funding being withdrawn or, if available, require state matching funds. If this request is approved, the capital construction expenditure limitation established by the Emergency Board will expire at the end of the current biennium and will not extend the normal six-year time frame for a capital construction project. If the project's completion extends beyond June 30, 2007, the department will be required to seek limitation for any remaining construction costs during the 2007 legislative session.
Discussion? Objection? Senator Devlin, I keep waiting for you to say something.
Please.
Item 27, Military Department, Representative Richardson.
Madam Co-Chair, the Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve the purchase by the Military Department of 17.91 acres of real property at the Oregon National Guard Military Training Reservation at Camp Gralia.
establish an other funds capital construction expenditure limitation, and transfer $600,000 of other funds capital construction expenditure limitation from the Lane County Armed Forces Reserve Center and Facility Maintenance Shop project to the newly created capital construction expenditure limitation for the Camp Ralea project. The department stated that it will not return to the legislature or the emergency board for a general fund request or to seek certification of participation expenditures authority to complete the Lane County project if additional funding for that project is required. The subcommittee recommends that the Department of Administrative Services unschedule $600,000 in the newly established Camp Ralea limitation until such time as the terms and conditions of the property sale have been negotiated with the landowner and the legal sufficiency of the contract has been reviewed by the Department of Justice. The subcommittee further recommends that the Department of Administrative Services unschedule $365,000 of other funds capital construction limitation for the Lane County Armed Forces Reserve Center and Facility Maintenance Shop project that the department states is no longer required for that project. Finally, the subcommittee recommends that the department report to the 2007 legislature on its overall strategic plan for dealing with encroachment, including whether statutory changes are required and proposals are on how such plan would be funded. If this request is approved, the expenditure limitation will expire at the end of the current biennium and will not extend the normal six-year time frame for a capital construction project. If the purchase is not completed by June 30, 2007, the department will be required to seek limitation during the 2007 legislative session. Now, what that means in English is that the Department of Military has saved some money that was allocated for a Lane County project. They would like to use $600,000 of that money to buy 17.91 acres of adjacent property that would help lessen the encroachment on Camp Ralea. If they are allowed to do that, which we're allowing to take place here, they will essentially have taken $600,000 of cash, which is not needed for current projects, and put it into this property, which is less than half a mile from the beach. And so they're saying that if there was a time that that money was needed to finish this Lane County project, they have assets that they can use to finish that project. Even if they had to sell this property to do that, they won't come back asking for more money from the legislature because we've approved this purchase of land. It's very rare that you get adjacent, contiguous property to a military base up for sale. They've got the opportunity to purchase it, and it sounded like a rational and reasonable thing to do.
Further discussion? Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to wholeheartedly endorse this, but for another reason. Those of you who are familiar with what happened at Camp Adair, just outside of Corvallis, it was a rifle range for the Oregon Guard. Because of the encroachment of homes near the rifle range, ultimately they had to shut the range down. That limits the ability to train guardsmen and police officers. That same scenario is in play here in Camp Ralea. Why? Because the gentleman who owns this 18 acres has a Measure 37 claim in the works. He can build 18 extremely expensive, high-quality home sites that close to the beach. It's worth a lot of money. We've got first shot at it so that this man doesn't go forward with his Measure 37 claim. He's already got a developer on the hook ready to build homes there. And that's the last thing we need at one of our last remaining rifle ranges, to not only train guardsmen but to train the state police and our other law enforcement individuals. The last thing we need is a lot more homes creating those kinds of conflicts. And I think this is a very appropriate direction, and I think we should probably write a letter to another letter, Senator Carter, for saying thank you, because they've done a great job at the Eugene Armory and that facility in saving money, bringing that project in under budget, and getting the federal government to pick up more of it than has ever been done before. So with that, my colleagues, I would move that we accept this and move forward with it. And I would move we recommend a letter of congratulations to the Guard.
No, ma'am.
Yeah. No.
I didn't start the letter discussion, and I don't want to continue it.
Any objection? Motion carries. Item 28, Real Estate Agency, Senator Carter.
Thank you. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $2,177,513, continue to create 30 existing positions through the end of the biennium 9.9 FTE, and authorize the establishment of two limited duration positions to enable continued operations from October 2006 through June 2007. This recommendation will also enable the agency to address ongoing workload issues in the licensing, administrative, and land development sections of the agency. The subcommittee received a summary of the final report from the Joint Interim Task Force on Real Estate Agency Oversight from the task force co-chairs. The task force was charged with examining the role, function, and composition of the Real Estate Board, the role and practices of the Real Estate Commissioner and the agency, alternative forms of licensure and regulation for the industry, and a review of actions in response to an internal audit completed by the Department of Administrative Services. A copy of the report is included in your materials. The subcommittee acknowledged that the agency may experience additional unanticipated costs due to issues such as contested cases, licensing examination costs, and additional background checks. The agency can return to the emergency board or Ways and Means Committee should it need additional limitation before the end of the biennium to cover these costs. Colleagues, I want to say that this agency has been in serious trouble and in disrepair for some time, but kudos to Representative Sal
Esquivel.
And Senator Betsy Johnson, who's done a good job of working with them through the interim. There are still some problems, and we noted those on record yesterday, encouraging them to do a better job with their board and to be a little more forthcoming in terms of some of the issues that they face across the state, and do a better job of working with the Real Estate Association and other people. But at this particular time, we're asking, the subcommittee is asking that you recommend this approval.
Discussion? Objection? Item 29, Employment Department, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board acknowledge receipt of a report on the implementation of the Child Care Contribution Tax Credit Program. The Employment Division was directed to report to the emergency board on the implementation of the program. The department has created demonstration projects funded by the Child Care Contribution Tax Credit, which promotes quality care, affordability, and additional compensation for providers who progress through a series of professional development standards. The Employment Department reported that all available tax credits had been purchased for 2005 and that 70% of available tax credits had already been purchased for 2006. The department expects that the remaining credits will be exhausted shortly. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board acknowledge receipt of the report.
Further discussion? Objection? Item 30, Parks and Recreation Department, Representative
Boone. All right, I'm still ready. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation for operations by $506,000 for recreational trails projects, increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation for facility repair and maintenance by $1 million for paving projects, and increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation for the State Fair, established by the Emergency Board at its meeting on April 7, 2006, by $500,000 for improvements to the State Fairgrounds. The 2005-07 legislative adopted budget for parks was based on revenue projections from the May 2005 forecast. Actual lottery revenues have increased with each quarterly revenue forecast, providing an opportunity for an additional $2 million for completion of parks projects. The Parks Commission proposes to utilize the uncommitted revenue on seven of the highest outdoor recreational trail projects identified in the statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan to accelerate deferred paving projects in nine state parks and to make improvements to the state fairgrounds. All of the projects are expected to be completed by the end of the biennium. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objection?
Motion carries.
Item 31, Parks and Recreation Department. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation for operations by $1,550,000 to supplement resources for the development of Stubbs Stewart State Park and drainage improvements at Garrison Lake. The 0507 legislatively adopted budget for the Parks and Recreation Department included $11.8 million for development of Stubbs Stewart State Park. The total project budget was $12.3 million. The difference between the total project cost of $12.3 million and the legislatively adopted budget of $11.8 million was planned to come from the non-limited acquisition development trust fund, but the additional $500,000 was not included in the expenditure limitation. In order to keep the project on track as planned this biennium, Parks is requesting an increase in its other funds expenditure limitation of $500,000 to be paid from the trust fund for Stubbs Stewart State Park projects. This money will be used for restrooms, solar thermal water heating, and restroom shower roof enclosures. In 2003, Parks purchased property at Garrison Lake. Purchasing the property came with some severe drainage issues that needed to be resolved. The drainage issues threatened several private homes, an archaeological site, and the city sewer treatment plant. Parks has entered into an agreement with Curry County and the City of Port Orford to implement a permanent solution to the drainage problem. The final design is for the installation of a 6x12-foot box culvert at the south end of Garrison Lake. Total costs for the project are estimated to be $1.3 to $1.8 million. OPRD is requesting that $1,050,000 be utilized for a permanent drainage solution at Garrison Lake. The balance of funding will come from Curry County and the City of Port Orford. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion?
Madam Chair. Hey, Madam Chair. This item and the next item I have concerns about, and several different reasons. Number one, these are not emergencies. These are not emergencies. We have increased lottery money as a result of the line games and veto poker and all that's come through here. These types of things, I respectfully submit, should be vetted actually in session. These are session type of issues. Second problem I have is the nature of where the money's going. When Measure 66 was adopted by the voters of this great state, they expected to be seeing parkland being built, bought. And this is not what's happening. Our agency has grown tremendously. We now have computer systems. We have a ton of new personnel. We have projects that are accelerating our maintenance backlog work, which is okay, but it's going to get done anyway at the risk of and at the expense of building parkland. I think this is a huge problem. I've got a letter from the Nature Conservancy that if I may just read one sentence here, or two sentences. You know, if I were concerned the proposed budget does not provide adequate funding to expand the park system. Without a significant investment in real new assets, we feel the public will lose confidence in the department, regardless of whether the maintenance backlog is eliminated. And this is where I'm coming from. I think less than 25% of the budget for this department is going towards parkland acquisition, both in the local grant program as well as on the statewide basis. I feel the department is actually not living up to its constitutional obligation to provide parkland for our great state. In this particular case, I think the Garrison Lake project has merit. I mean, we need to do some long-term solutions. I don't know how much of an emergency it is, but has merit. But to build five bloody restrooms, I mean, come on, folks. That's a tragedy. That's a tragedy. So I'm strongly against this proposal, and I'll speak briefly on the next proposal in the Chair's Commission.
Further discussion? Representative Morgan.
Just to address some of the issues that Senator Schrader has brought forward, the balance in the department's budget between acquisitions and maintenance of the existing system is an ongoing, very hot discussion topic. The department has just recently completed guidelines for property acquisition that were not in place before this, and I think that as we move forward, we will find that the acquisitions are much more strategically developed to meet needs that have been clearly identified across the state. And so I personally feel better having that plan in place, that the acquisition budget will be more strategic than it has been in the past. The initiative itself that funds this whole thing clearly spoke to the maintenance and upgrading of the existing park system, and I absolutely support the parks in moving in that direction, and I hope that they continue to move in that direction. I think that the other item of discussion here is that when Measure 66, which is the major funding mechanism for this, runs out, we have to be able to maintain the park system that we have in place in that time in case the measure isn't reauthorized by the voters. So there needs to be attention paid on the acquisition side from the point of view of being able to develop and maintain the system as a whole. But I'm very respectful of the senator's comments. I just wanted to kind of give an alternate perspective.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to say part of what Susan just said, Representative Morgan just said, but to address Senator Schrader's concern about an emergency, the piece that's important in the Garrison Lake one, I was contacted by a Curry County commissioner. The erosion of the property that's going to affect the Native American piece, and part of that can't stand a lot more time, and I think that's the emergency nature of it in that sense, because we never know what the ocean's going to do, and I think that's the issue there. But thank you for your comments.
Any discussion? Any objections?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Schrader has an objection. Anyone else? Item 32, Parks and Recreation Department, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $510,061 for boating facility grants provided by the Marine Board. The 2005-07 legislatively adopted budget for the Parks and Recreation Department included $579,000 for development and rehabilitation of marine facilities based on historical funding from Marine Board grants. The Marine Board advised Parks that additional funding is available for expenditure during the current biennium. Parks worked with the Marine Board to identify projects that meet mutual priorities and that can be concluded within the biennium. Parks has sufficient expenditure limitation to cover the matching fund requirements, but requires an increase of $510,061 to expend the additional Marine Board grants. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objections? Item 34, Department of State Lands, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board defer approval of the request from the Department of State Lands for a federal funds expenditure limitation until an official notice of an award for a grant to acquire a conservation easement to protect and enhance population of Fender's blue butterfly is received from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The Regional Office of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service reports the grant proposal received a due fund recommendation from their office for a federal cooperative endangered species conservation fund recovery land acquisition grant, which is forwarded to the National Program Coordinator. Based on this recommendation, State Lands sought approval for an increase in federal funds expenditure limitation to distribute the grant to the Nature Conservancy. However, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been unable to provide a written notice of grant award because funds may be redistributed for other programs. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends the request be deferred until the official notice of award is received by the Department.
Discussion? Objection?
Object, Madam Chair.
Senator Schrader is no. Motion carries. Item 35, Department of State Lands, Representative Boone. Was anybody else in that committee besides Boone and Morgan?
This is a setup because they're waiting for this little appliance to break completely and flip out. Yeah. So I think that's the deal. The more I talk, the more it's going to happen. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. The education sub... Wait a minute.
Did it happen?
Subcommittee recommends that... But this isn't my committee. This is 35. Recommends emergency board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation to the... I get it now. The common school fund programs for $18 million for the removal of the motor vessel New Carissa shipwreck from state property, with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the funds until the agency negotiates a final contract and demonstrates a need to expend the additional funds. The New Carissa ran aground on the Southern Oregon coast on February 4th, 1999. Litigation against the owners of the New Carissa resulted in $27.1 million held in trust pending that final legal action. In spring 2006, the owners and the state land board entered into a settlement agreement which awarded the Department of State Lands $22.1 million, which includes responsibility to remove the remaining wreckage of the New Carissa by state lands. The department is currently negotiating a contract with Titan, a Crowley company, for the removal of the wreck of the New Carissa. Current estimates indicate that $18 million will be required for removal. The remaining $4.1 million will be deposited into the Common School Fund for reimbursement of legal expenses. Your Education Subcommittee recommends approval of this request with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the funds. I think it's General Government Subcommittee, because that's the one I'm on. And whoever wrote the pony, I thank you for at least making me able to read it without looking my teeth out. Thank you.
Further discussion? Item 36, Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $558,000, with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule approximately $561,000 of the increase until immediate need for the additional limitation is demonstrated. The Department of Geology and Mineral Industries anticipates needing additional other funds expenditure limitation due to new contracts for services with other government entities such as ODOT, higher than anticipated sales of the nature of the Northwest Information Center, and increased revenue in the mine lands regulation and reclamation program. The subcommittee recommends that $27,000 of the requested expenditure limitation increase needed for higher attorney general charges be made available immediately, with the request that the remainder of the increase be unscheduled. Your general government subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Discussion? Objection.
Item 37, Department of Ag and Economic and Community Development Department. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board allocate $500,000 to the Economic and Community Development Department from the emergency fund reservation established for direct cash assistance payment to fishers affected by the closure of most commercial salmon fisheries along the Oregon coast. The reservation was established during the last meeting of the emergency board for direct cash assistance payment to salmon fishers. At the same time, it authorized the use of $500,000 from the strategic reserve for the same purpose. ODA reports that it created a process for the first $500,000 designated to consider all applications for assistance on a need basis and mail cash payments within 8 weeks. This goal was met and checks were mailed on August 11, 2006. ODA received and processed over 340 applications, of which 283 received cash assistance payments that averaged $1,764 per successful applicant. ODA intends to use a distribution formula based on salmon landings for the second $500,000 being requested at this meeting, a methodology that will still achieve the emergency board's goal of ensuring that the cash assistance be distributed based on the needs of each applicant. The department plans to use the same cap payment amounts used during the first round of cash assistance distribution. Your general government subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Discussion? Representative Richardson?
Madam Co-Chair, I believe this is a bad precedent for us to set, and I don't think it's appropriate, so I'm going to be voting no.
Any discussion?
Any objections beside Representative Richardson? Motion carries. Item 38, Department of Agriculture, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board allocate $235,000 from the emergency fund to begin research on potential impacts of growing canola and other oil seed crops on specialty seed crops in the Willamette Valley. Canola plants produce a very small seed that is similar in shape to other specialty seeds such as broccoli seeds that could become a contaminant in specialty seed crops. There's also concern by growers of other crops that they may suffer from pests or diseases common to canola that are not now present in their crops, or that their current non-oilseed crops may suffer from cross-pollination if growing of canola is permitted near their operations. In response to these fears, the Department of Agriculture restricted growth of canola crops through establishment of protected zones where canola growth is prohibited and zones where growth is allowed. The current exclusion zones include all of the Willamette Valley. ODA reports they need the emergency fund allocation for a study to provide the information needed to determine if the restrictions currently in place can be eased. With this funding, canola would be planted in test fields this fall with the assistance of OSU scientists, and some data would then be available by next summer. The full study would probably take 3 years to complete, and ODA has included a policy option package for around $400,000 general fund for the 07-09 biennium in their agency request budget to complete the study begun with this requested funding. The subcommittee discussed the importance of beginning this research program now and not having to wait until next fall to begin to answer questions surrounding the growing of canola. Committee members, this is a highly contentious issue, and in the natural resource issue or arena, we often see issues that are very polarized, and this is clearly one of them. The committee spent a long time discussing this proposal and surfaced a lot of information around it, and the final recommendation that came out was a unanimous vote to fund this on the part of the committee. So your general government subcommittee recommends approval of the request, and I would be very happy to answer questions.
Discussion?
Just a question to the carriers.
Senator Winters.
Because I like, for the record, I have had received some correspondence from my constituents in Willamette, in the Willamette Valley, the concern about the cross-pollination and the contamination issue. And so with the assurance that the Willamette Valley is an exclusion,
The test plots that are proposed by OSU to be planted with canola are in the Willamette Valley. The department has got the specialty seed farmers have a recommendation for a 3 mile island around the of exclusion to protect their crops from cross pollination and other things. The sites that OSU is proposing are actually 5 miles away from any of the seed crops that are being grown right now in the valley. The committee, that was one of the concerns that the committee members had going into this, and we closely questioned Oregon State University on the placement of the test plots and the potential for effect of the specialty seed crop farmers, and we were satisfied with the information that was brought forward both in the placement of the plots and in the treatment of the seeds as they're being harvested and in the treatment of the harvest equipment, that the risk of exposure and cross-contamination between canola and the specialty seed crops was extremely minimal.
What's the nature of the emergency?
The nature of the emergency, why the department brought this request forward, is that this is an issue of great ongoing concern with farmers in Oregon. There are a number of farmers, predominantly the grass crop farmers, the grass seed farmers, that are interested in developing a rotation crop. And they're having problems with weed species being introduced into their grass seed, and because of the their inability to do as much burning as they could in the past, they're looking for a crop to plant as an alternate to do a rotation to get on top of the weed issues. Also, with the issues around the cost of fuel right now, there are a number of farmers that are looking for some alternatives to fuel, and there is a lot of interest in developing biodiesel facilities for farmers to use to run their farm equipment. The department brought this request to the emergency board because if we fund it now, we can actually get information back from the study earlier, much sooner than if we will put this off for another year and put the information that will be gathered from the study 1 year out also.
Senator Schrader, Senator Wesson, and Senator Gordon.
Two questions and then some comments, if I may. And I appreciate the chair is trying to vet this very thoroughly. But I come from the Willamette Valley, the upper Willamette Valley. And this is dangerous. The first question would be, you know, why is the department and why would the legislature reverse a stand that was just taken after extensive hearings process less than a year ago to not allow canola in the Willamette Valley? Less than a year ago, decision was made after extensive hearings. A lot of my farming friends and neighbors testified and discussed this, and a thoughtful decision was made not to grow canola in the valley. And then less than a year later, not that much has changed. All of a sudden, the department is reversing itself. Could you answer that?
I could address that because we asked that same question. The department does have the ability to establish exclusion zones for growing things. They don't do it very often, but they did do it with canola. The Willamette Valley is part of the exclusion zone. Part of Central Oregon is in the exclusion zone, and then there's a strip down the border between Oregon and Idaho that is also in the zone. Under the regulations that zone is in place, the department does have the ability to establish to do research inside those zones, and so that's how they're going forward with this proposal. That the proposal is for a very, very limited and very well controlled plantings of canola to try to establish with different soil types, different elevations, different microclimates, what the yields will be in the valley, and this will be information that will very much enrich the policy discussion that this legislature is going to be in around biodiesel and alternate fuels. There is by no means enough information to go forward to make the any kind of policy decisions about how to protect those specialty crop farmers, how economically viable the canola industry is. Other aspects of the study are researching alternate oilseed crops that won't have the potential to impact the specialty seed growers to find out whether those crops are economically viable. And there's also a component of it that will establish a GIS mapping system to map where the specialty seed crop farmers are farming. And so then the state will have the ability to lay that information over top of soil types, rainfall, wind currents, all those other kinds of GIS information labels or layers that are available, and make some realistic policy analysis scenarios for us to be able to have a reasoned discussion on this issue as we proceed with the biodiesel issue.
No response, Madam Chair. I mean, I appreciate the research aspect, but I can tell you that there's no reason on God's green earth to introduce a weed and a known reservoir host for some serious pests to the most fertile and most productive area, farming area of our great state. I mean, and that will not be addressed in this study. There's been no discussion of how to control, who's going to be liable as these seeds and pollen. The pollen aspect may be, I think has been addressed by the department. I think they've done a good job. But the seed issue is not. Oh, right, okay. Now, they're going to get in these research plots. They're going to be in these hermetically sealed bags and trucks. And as long as it's done that way, yeah, seed might not travel very far. But if you think this isn't the camel's nose under the tent for widespread production of canola in our valley, I think you're mistaken. And it will get loose. I mean, nature finds a way. That is very true. Nature finds a way. So you're not going to be getting the data that the research purports to be giving you. It is a known fact that the cabbage maggot, it destroys some of the most productive vegetable and specialty crops that we have in the valley. This product could be grown much more easily, less controversially, in other areas of this great state that perhaps need to build up some farming base. My question, I guess, to the chair would be, why is this an emergency to grow this in the Willamette Valley, where it's a known problem and the farmers don't want it for the most part, when we can grow this in other areas of our state that perhaps need the revenue and can make it happen? It's at best a rotation crop. And there's not going to be a cash crop for any farmer. It's at best a rotation crop. Why are we putting all these valuable crops at risk in our state?
Again, Senator Schrader, in response to the points that you raise, that these are test plots in highly controlled situations. We questioned OSU closely on how they were going to contain the seeds and how they were going to deal with the potential spreading from the plots. They described to us a harvesting process where the products will be kept in closed bags. The harvesting equipment will be decontaminated and thoroughly cleaned after the harvest takes place, and then there will be a deal of diligence to be on the lookout in the areas surrounding the test plots for any sprouts in subsequent seasons. But these will be planted for one season, and so the potential there, I think, for contamination is very low. Again, I would stress the information that was presented to the subcommittee. This is a research project. This is very polarized, where there are people that on the other side of this issue that are just as passionate and directed at the need to do this research, and people that are very in the grass seed industry that are very interested in exploring the potential that the crop has economically in the valley, and I feel confident that with the restrictions that are in place and with the scrutiny that OSU has on the canola part of the grant, bearing in mind that it's only a part of the grant that deals with the canola test plots, that the information that is gained from this will very much inform the discussion that will take place as the political issues build around biodiesel in the state. And I think that it's my personal opinion that I'm very respectful of the risks that this presents to the specialty seed croppers. It's not my intention at all to put their businesses at risk in any way, shape, or form. But I think that the committee and the body needs to acknowledge that the biodiesel issue is not going to go away. It's only going to become more predominant and more in center stage in the legislative arena, and that we need to have an informed discussion around that issue, and that the data that will be collected as a result of this study will be very important in informing that discussion.
Last comment, Madam Chair. I apologize for the time, and I appreciate the chair and indulgence here. I have a friend of mine that was hoping to testify on this he got word of this whole issue, I think, with a week's notice and such, and I was hoping to come down and testify on this yesterday, or at least be present. I couldn't make it because, you know, pumpkin harvest has come. Pumpkin harvest has come. So he's got to do some work. He's got some work. He doesn't have the luxury of sitting here pontificating about stuff we don't really know about. He's actually trying to make our valley work, make it the beautiful place it is, make it the productive place it is. My Clackamas County farmers are totally against this proposal. And while a lot of people not from the valley don't see much problem with it, my people do. I'm just asking my colleagues to respect my farmers in my valley. This is a tough deal for them. This is a tough deal for them. They thought they had a two-year window with which they could maybe come to grips with this, come to some accommodation, as it is controversial. The chair is absolutely correct on that. But it's a known fact that I can tell you what the study's going to show you at the end of the day. The study's going to show you that the cross-pollination piece probably taken care of, not a big concern. It will not show you anything about the liability issues when the grass does get loose. Bent grass in Bend out has gotten loose from study plots out that way. And who's going to be liable for that? Is that going to be an increase in our budget for weed and pest management that we're going to have to come up with? That will not be addressed by this research. The cabbage maggot, that little sucker's going to fly wherever. I don't care if it's 3, 5, 10, 15 miles. You can't control that. That will get loose. You know, it will show that the test plots, higher yields, are not going to be what most farmers are going to get when they put it in large fields in the Willamette Valley. It will be, at best, as I said, a rotation crop. A rotation crop that, with increased plantings after this study is done, and the Department of Agriculture feels increased pressure, how in Lord's name are they going to figure out who to say yes to and who to say no to? I think this just makes it worse. I would respectfully submit that the research project, while couched in biodiesel, political, popular terms, and science management, isn't going to give us the answers we need. And I talked to the researchers, I talked to the farmers, this hurts them. There's no way it's not going to hurt them if we start growing canola in larger quantities in the valley, and that's what this project is really all about. The decision was made by the department and the farmers in this great state back at the end of last year. I see no reason on an emergency basis with no guarantee of further funding next session. In fact, it would be very difficult, I think, to get the funding next session to continue this project. And we don't know what's going to happen with Measure 41, Measure 48, all these things. So while I appreciate the, and I know the department has gone through great lengths to do everything they can, but the project is flawed from the start and will not give us the answers, and my people are going to be impacted. That's all I should consider. My people are going to be impacted. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, first of all, I just sincerely want to compliment Director Koba and Russ, his last name escapes me.
Carroll.
Russ Carroll, the agronomist.
Oh, State University.
OSU. For some of the most forthright, specific, and articulate testimony that I've had the pleasure of hearing in any subcommittee, anywhere, any place, any time. I thought they answered all of our questions very thoughtfully, very thoroughly, and very candidly. And this is a difficult decision. And it is certainly, just like everything in life, not without some risk. Senator Schrader has spoken to various inherent risks in the agricultural field. You know, every crop has certain inherent advantages and disadvantages to other crops. I mean, mint that this valley was once famous for, you know, is very susceptible and spreads or at least increases the soil content of nematodes. The cabbage maggot is widespread in the valley. Not pervasive, but found almost everywhere. There are soil viruses that are particularly prevalent in fields where canola has been grown for a number of years that are higher than fields where they're not. That's true with carrot seed. Each crop has its own particular, you know, merits and demerits. And I just think it's incumbent upon this body, this committee, to certainly explore every economic development opportunity that we possibly can, and it's presented in a forthright and very scientific manner such as this. I agree with Senator Schrader that the test results have to be evaluated very carefully and screened through the eyes of these are test plots, the extraordinary precautions that are inherent in this study, you know, must be considered when any decision is made for wider approval. But on the whole, again, I think this is a very rational, reasonable thing for this body to approve, and as such would encourage and I vote.
Further discussion? Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. LFO recommended denying this request, and I'd like to hear from the analyst. May we hear from the analyst what are the reasons behind that recommendation?
Madam Chair, members of the board, Senator Gordley, we had a number of reasons we outlined in our analysis for denial. The first of which is that when all the requests came in initially, there were more requests.
Excuse me, could you pull that microphone? Thank you.
There were more requests for funding than there was available in the emergency fund. I believe from the actions you've taken and are ready to take today, you've addressed that concern. Secondly, we were concerned, as you heard from Senator Schrader, about the possibility of this obligating in some way the legislature for 07 to continue funding to get the study finished without knowing the full context of what the budget would be next session. We also asked the department if they felt that this program was of high enough priority for them to reprioritize their own funding within their budget to make some money available. And they were unable to find any money or other programs that they could make some dollars available for this program. And we felt that if the department was unable to prioritize this program ahead of their own, it would be difficult for the emergency board to make such a change in priority with the limited funding they have available for all the needs that you have people coming in front of you for.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Again, a question to LFO. If this is approved in conjunction with the remaining items on the agenda and they are approved, what would be our general purpose emergency balance?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, if you do all the actions that the subcommittee has recommended, you would have a balance of $4.9 million for the next meeting. There's likely to be between $10 and $12 million additional available to the board in the next meeting due to the reversions of special purpose appropriations that weren't fully allocated. But again, you still have potential liabilities of over $20 million if everything goes badly for us. So.
Thank you.
Right. Well. Discussion.
Madam Chair.
Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I join in opposition to this. Our local area farmers are quite upset about it. I think that for all the reasons that LFO has stated, it does not rise to the occasion of being an emergency. Department of Ag can't find the money to shift it around, and I think we're getting dangerously low. So I would join Senator Schrader and ask you to please consider those things and what effect it will have on local farmers before you make the decision to move this forward.
Further discussion? Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, I was a yes vote on this. I was ready to vote yes and enthusiastically support this until I heard the comments of our two good co-chairs. Because I'll tell you what, nothing's worse than someone coming over the mountain and telling them how they ought to operate in their backyard. And so I'm going to be a no vote because of your statements.
Further discussion? Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I think there's some pretty serious misconceptions amongst members of the committee here, and I would ask your attendance to my words. I'm a fifth-generation Oregon farmer. I'm sort of an expert on this particular subject. I have grown these crops on my farm. These are crops that are generally part of a family of vegetable seeds called brassicas. And they're pretty broad. They do cross-pollinate. For the very reasons that a certain small segment of growers in this valley have concerns, are the very reasons that we need to do this study, is because much of the concerns that they have are misconceptions. If you talk to the researchers at Oregon State University, they will tell you that many of the misconceptions, the fears brought forward by the farmers and the vegetable seed, and I mean the vegetable seed industry, are misconceptions based on their research and what they know to be true. That's why we need research. Now, why do it here in the valley? Because the valley is where the problem is. We need to understand what the real issues are between canola and other seeds. Seeds like the radish seeds that I've grown, the cabbage seed. This industry is already here. They're already growing these crops here. In fact, Oregon State University is already growing canola. They have for the last 2 years. I went out to their test plot this year. And by the way, it's a test plot that yielded over 6,000 pounds, and it's 7 cents a pound. Yeah, a farmer can grow that and make a crop, make a profit on it, not just as a rotation. Problem is that it's not likely that we're going to grow canola again. It's not likely that we're going to grow canola in the valley because of this controversial issue. We want to protect the vegetable seed industry. That's why we developed the rule. I was part of the rulemaking process. The vegetable seed growers that are so concerned, and they have a legitimate argument, the vegetable seed growers want to provide the world's market in the future of seed to grow canola. You see, there's this incredible demand coming for biodiesel. The canola seed is an excellent source of biodiesel, but it's not the only source. That's the other part of the OSU study, is to find alternatives to canola so that we don't have to worry about growing canola in the valley. That's the point. We need to understand how canola interacts, because there are the misconceptions. They want to get at that for study, and they're going to study other crops. If you deny this request now, then we're going to miss a season. It's raining. I have a field this weekend that I'm going to be desperately trying to get worked up to get it planted. That's the emergency. We need to get this in the ground now. We need to get alternatives to canola in the ground now. That's what this is about. Now, this also helps. What the vegetable seed growers that you're concerned about are not telling you is that they fight amongst themselves. Because they have a cabbage seed crop here, their neighbor has another crop over here, and they cross-pollinate. This study will help them resolve some of their conflicts with real study work and results. Now, one of the other things that I want to share with you is that there are two biodiesel plants. There's one operating in the state today. There are two more in the process of being permitted. The governor's coming with a biofuels package in addition to other renewable energy issues. Why on earth would we not want to provide the research to resolve these contracts to allow rural development and our farmers to provide a source of product for the coming biodiesel plants that are going to be built in this state? And that's really what's going to happen. Now, that also means that let's talk about funding down the road to complete the study. When the biofuels plants get built here, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars of investment. I don't think it's a stretch to go to them as an industry and say, would you help us fund further studies? But we have to get started now. It helps resolve the conflicts that are out there today. It provides the alternative research to canola. As a farmer, I can tell you, I'd love to grow something other than canola, not have to worry. And there are. There's flaxseed oil. There's pygmy sunflower. OSU needs to plant these crops right now. This is important, and I would encourage you all to please, yes, the concerns are real. OSU is going to provide the study work to prove what the realities are, number one. They're already growing it. They've had no problems, by the way, with any of their local farmers where they're growing it outside of Oregon State University. None. So let's do it in a controlled atmosphere, and let's find out what the real alternatives to canola are. If you deny this request, that just isn't going to happen. And this will continue. It'll be a perpetual argument down the road. The issue of the maggots and the bugs, folks, they're already here. And growing two or three little test plots will have zero effect on the fact that today these vegetable seed farmers that we're so concerned about have to fight those bugs today. This isn't going to change any of that for them. That's a false argument. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this study is not about growing canola. It's about understanding the effects that canola has to end the arguments with other crops, but it's about alternatives to canola. That's what we need to focus on here. That'll be the real result out of this over time. Thank you.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just feel compelled to respectfully disagree with my good colleague, Representative Krupp, because I talk with the researchers, and they don't see this study answering the questions that I posed. When I asked Russ about how this is going to deal with the pest control issue, he said it won't. It can't. When I asked him about is canola going to become a very viable cash crop for our farmers in the valley, he said no. So that's the reality of what's going on here. I want people to have accurate information.
Senator Schrader, what about the other crops that are going to come out of this study? Those are alternative to canola.
If I can finish, because I think that you do make a good point on that. If we don't have the canola as part of this study, then I think I wouldn't be objecting to it going forward, because I think we need to have perhaps a look-see at other crops, others that don't interfere with the brassicas. The other thing that the good representative's under misconception about is there are root crops, not just seed crops, but root crops. I have friends and neighbors that grow rutabagas and turnips, and they are completely destroyed by the cabbage maggot. Matter of fact, the cabbage maggot, as has been said, is already so bad in our valley that there's no legal pesticide you can use. These guys have had to apply for a special permit to use a product to even grow a viable crop here in the valley. If we introduce a known weed and reservoir to expand the cabbage maggot's domain, there'll be no more vegetable crop in the state of Oregon. There'll be no more specialty seed. And I know for a fact there's a specialty seed grower that if we approve this request, is going to leave the valley. It's going to leave the valley.
No, he won't. He's making too much money here, Senator. There's no way he's going to leave.
Point of personal privilege?
For a test plot, they're already growing.
Point of personal privilege?
Members, we need to conduct ourselves with the some decorum here.
Natural resources arena.
Okay. Let's get this back under control. Representative Morgan, I believe you were next.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I do absolutely respect the discussion that's going on here. I think that this is, again, a great example of the polarization of a great many issues in the natural resources arena. And there is, I think, very passionate beliefs on both sides of this issue. What I would like to do is just address one of the points that Senator Schrader raised, because we did have a great discussion in the subcommittee yesterday about the purposes of the research and what the questions were that we're hoping to be answered as a result of the research taking place. And clearly, one of the things that the study is hoping to establish is what the issues are around the economic viability of canola crops in the valley. Part of what's going on here is those test plots at Oregon State University that Representative Krupp were talking about had an enormous yield to them. And there's great question about whether that yield can be duplicated on different soil types, different rainfall areas, different elevations. And so that's what the test plots are hoping to do. The test plots are located in different areas of the valley. And the information that will be garnered from the results of those growings will be used to decide whether it is economically viable to grow canola in the state of Oregon and what the yields can really be expected to be out in the field. So I do take exception to the Senator's comments that there is no economic data coming out of the study, because all of the they were very clear with us that around the canola study and around the other oilseed crop study, that one of the clear things that was going to come out of that was information about whether any of these crops would be economically viable and what the good, bad, and ugly aspects of that part of the discussion would be.
Further discussion? Senator Courtney.
Well, Senator Schrader, you've done it. You told me you were going to put me on the spot, and you have. I'm going to vote for this. I don't know the science here. And Senator Schrader knows that. I don't know the science. Reminds me of the classic situation. Five physicists say you can bury nuclear waste safely. Five physicists say you can't. And the whole world, I like the whole, you know, the whole world, the black tuxedo, and I'm a pair of brown shoes. All I know is I talked to Katie Cove about this because Senator Schrader started to work me over days ago. All I know is there's a paragraph that appears in her letter that is meaningful to me, in that it says that the potential processors of biodiesel are seeking local feedstocks. They know they can grow this. I'm told through the letter. That's my documentation, because I don't know. I'm not signed. I don't have the certified smarts that you and Representative Krupka do have. That they can only get about 13,000 to 15,000 Eastern Oregon. Now, I've been led to believe they can't do that much more out there, Representative Smith, because they can't. You know about these things. I don't know about these things. Why is that significant? Well, because the largest metropolitan area in the state have set certain standards of biodiesel blend which they need. And they say in that paragraph they need 40,000 acres to do that. If you don't have 40,000 acres, I guess, in this, you have to import this, which is where the state of Washington is, because they've set these incredible goals. They build all kinds of sheds and things, but they can't grow it, so they're going to have to start to import it. So you have that issue. Then I have over here on the growing canola as a feedstock for biofuels in Oregon fox sheet, I have here that right now the Willamette Valley growers produce canola on a small scale, I admit a small scale, some 30 acres. So somewhere between those two paragraphs, I'm looking for hope and light. And I'd like to find a way to do this as fast as possible within my own state. Now, when you start talking about weeds and maggots, I don't want to threaten farmland in the Mid-Valley. That's my Senate district. I think that's my Senate district.
For now it is, sir.
Well, that's true. And maybe you're going to try to help do something about that as under 7. But the fact is, I have to rely in good faith on the testimony that's come out of the subcommittee, as well as what the good director, Katie Kober, told me, that this is... These are experiments. I'm calling experiments. I'm calling tests. You call them whatever you want. Plots, big, you know, whatever they are. So that the researchers are going to try to figure out when they can do this, how much they can do it, as quickly as they can do it, so that we can perhaps try to do this within our own state, because we're moving more and more towards all the fuels, and whether we can do it safe or not. So that's all I know. So I'm a yes for that reason. That's simplistic. But I'm a layperson from an urban area. So that's how I have to make these decisions. I don't have a background that the great Representative Crump, the great Senator Schrader, the great Representative Smith, Representative Susan Moore, and all these naturalists. I don't have that background. So I'm just going back and forth like a tennis match here, saying, what do I do? So I'm looking at the fact sheet. I know what the city of Portland's trying to do. I know we're going to be forced into biodiesel. I want to go there. Can we do it within our boundaries, or are we going to have to import it? And, you know, I'm learning lessons from the state of Washington, which everybody was raving about being way ahead of us. Now I find out through the director of ag that they're struggling because they can't meet their goals unless they go out of state. So look, I'm a yes vote. My fellow senators, do whatever you want. But that, for the record, that's what I'm doing. Thank you for letting me say that. I don't think that enlightened anybody, but it made me feel a little better.
Senator Winters?
I think we're all in a conundrum, but and I raised the question of, is this an emergency early on? I raised the question of the contamination, and I have heard from my constituents here in the Valley who are Senator Schrader in the business, and I'm very concerned when you start talking about an industry where in the Willamette Valley the economic impact is greater than most people think, mine as state employees, but the fact is we're a natural resource community. And I do not want to put at risk with having all of these question marks. To be honest, I mean, we sat here and we all have still an abundance of questions. And when we can have this long of a debate and a discussion, it tells me we have not vetted well enough. We have not been conclusive enough. So I will be joining my Senator Schrader with in voting no.
Further discussion? Senator Devlin, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm in a situation quite similar to the Senate President, but my concerns are a little bit different in that why I'm wavering on this is I understand the concerns that Representative Krupp has about timing and delay, and I understand the concerns that Senator Schrader has about this. And I also understand there's probably hundreds of people outside these rooms that share opinions on both sides of this. One of the things that LFO has indicated is what's the emergency here? And I know Representative Cook believes there's an emergency to go forward. But I know there are a lot of people out here in disagreement on this. I know that as good as this process is here for the e-board, it's not as good as our process during the full session to vet issues. I know that this will come back, regardless of what we do today, in the session. And this issue will be vetted in the session. And many of those parties that may not be in agreement now may be in agreement then, or they may not. Obviously, if we take this action to go forward now, that discussion is still going to occur in the regular session. But I don't see the urgency to make this decision.
Point of personal privilege, please.
Senator Cohen.
It appears that all of our scientists have made their statement. May we please move the previous question up and down vote.
Senator Kerr moves previous question. Any objections? No, previous question? No. Motion carries. Go to the vote. You want to do a roll call vote.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Morgan?
Yes.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Krupp?
Yes.
Representative Richardson?
Yes.
Representative Hannah?
Yes.
Representative Boone?
Yes.
Representative Barker?
Yes.
Co-Chair Lewis?
Yes.
Senator Schrader?
No.
Senator Carter?
Yeah.
Senator Westlin?
Yes.
Senator Gordley?
No.
Senator Winters?
No.
Senator Devlin?
No.
Senator Morris?
No.
Co-Chair Courtney?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Well, that was fun.
Good discussion.
Next agenda item. Item number 39, Department of Agriculture.
No.
Representative Morgan.
Here comes another fun one. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board defer the request to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $700,000 for a federal grant to acquire 6,065 acres in Wallowa County. In its April 2006 meeting, the Emergency Board approved a request by the Department of Agriculture to apply to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for a $700,000 federal grant to purchase 6,065 acres in Wallowa County on behalf of the Nature Conservancy. The purchase is intended to protect a plant community that now provides habitat for the federally threatened Spalding's catchfly. The Department of Agriculture was requesting authority to spend the federal grant money. Your general government subcommittee discussed the fact that the federal grant had not yet been awarded and decided to recommend deferral of the request until the next meeting of the Emergency Board in November.
Discussion.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, this is my third term in this building. And you know what? There's over 6 years, we've had a lot of disagreements. We've had a lot of contention. With a little self-reflection, I can see that I've burnt bridges at times. You know the saying, if you're going to burn a bridge, you better be a good swimmer. But you know what? I have never, ever gone against any one of you on a vote that directly impacted your district when you asked for assistance. I've always deferred to you because you're the elected official in that district. Right now we have an issue before us. It's a question. Should public dollars be used to acquire private land in Wallowa County? I'm going to contend no. Now I want to put this in perspective. How would you feel if in downtown Portland the state of Oregon assisted in funding the acquisition of land and then put a fence around that land? I said, you can look at it, but don't touch it. Took a couple of your prime buildings that served industry in your community, and put a fence around it and said, we're going to preserve these for the future. What if on the Oregon coast we took 6,000 acres and we put a fence around it and we said, you can drive by on 101, but don't walk out on that beach? What if in your suburban community we took 6,000 acres and we said, we're not going to have it available? That's the issue facing us today. Earlier this morning, two members of this body stated, help them, because they need to help their constituents. I'm looking at each of you and saying, I need your help to help my constituents. Wallowa County, I just want to put this in perspective how important this is. Wallowa County is 72% federal land. 72%. And on federal property, you don't have the benefit that folks with private land do. It's not there. This community is dying. Unemployment in the winter runs over 22%. And now we're going to decide whether or not the state of Oregon should use public resources, take away 6,000 acres of productive land that's used for our industry. In this building, we're not supposed to play on emotion or guilt. But I just want to remind each and every one of you, we may have disagreed on issues, and you may not like some of the conservative approaches I've taken. But when you've needed my help on an issue in your district, you've gotten it. When our coastal fishermen needed help, I gave my boat. when Multnomah County gang intervention dollars were needed, I gave my vote. When Clackamas County farmers needed help, I gave my vote. Hoping you'll join me in voting no. I have no issue. The citizens of Wallowa County have zero issue with the Nature Conservancy acquiring land in Wallowa County with their own dollars. Zero issue. The issue is should public resources be used to acquire this property? Hope you'll join me in voting no. Thank you.
I have a clarification.
Yes.
This motion is to defer the allocation of funds, and so if we vote no, does that mean it's not deferred, and therefore, what happens?
I think it's a simple, pretty much, isn't it? We do not. Do we take it up immediately, or we just—it's just there.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Richardson, I believe that this is similar to the earlier one, where if you defer it, it provides some time to work out any kind of problems between the county and the Nature Conservancy. And then if the grant is actually awarded to the department, they would have to come back in November, December meeting, the next meeting, and ask for limitation, at which time you could deal with it at that time. If you vote to not defer it, I think it just sort of sits there. There's no decision. Everything, again, would still go on. They would still seek the grant, and they would still have to come back in November or December in order to get a limitation to spend the money. And at that time, again, it would be before you, and you'd have to deal with it. So either way, I think it likely could come back.
Where is Jenna Hannah?
No.
Discussion. You know, we have tried to proceed very carefully on this issue because it is something we've tried to deal with great respect to both those folks located in the community. And we had a commissioner approach, came and visited me, and he asked us to please defer this to allow a further conversation between them, the commission, and the Nature Conservancy. And we've also had the other development with the other grant that didn't go forward. And so we felt it was prudent on its face to defer this to allow a further discussion between the Nature Conservancy and those folks located in the local community. And so we felt like that was the most prudent step, and truly, Representative, we are trying to respect very much, and I don't live there. I try to respect very much that local community, and it was a commissioner that came to me and asked me to please take this action to allow more communication between the Conservancy and the local community there. So we felt like this would be the most prudent thing to do. And then we'll take this up in November.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
I would just like to say I'm going to support for the reason you just said. But I am concerned. I'm going to get back with Representative Smith before we vote on it again in November. And I don't want to be locking up land. So I don't know what. If they're truly going to build a fence around it and not allow anybody in, I have a real problem with that. If it's going to be more public land, in reading the papers in the valley, I don't hear so much criticism about this kind of thing as much as where people who, some know and some not know, out from another area, for example, I go over there and buy a huge ranch, and I put up a fence and tell people who've hung there for their families for generations stay off my property, which I would have a right to do. That seems to be a critical problem over there, but I don't want to take land out that can't be used in the future for the benefit of people in Memphis. So, thank you.
Any discussion? Objection?
Object.
Objection.
Object.
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 and Schrader and Senator Rogers. Do you have all that?
Senator Winter.
Thank you. With that, the motion carries.
Madam Chair. Yeah. Thank you. This is the first time in my career that when a legislator has asked me not to, I mean, to vote against something that is in their community. And I respect that so much about you, Greg, because you know, normally I would be there. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was a big brouhaha, and I had promised very with sanctity that I would vote to support this action. So, but normally, I have to tell you folks, I try hard to go in somebody else's backyard and clean up, and I probably need to be cleaning up in my own. So, we'll have to look at this again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Item 40, Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board establish a lottery fund's expenditure limitation of $613,708 for debt service for implementation of Senate Bill 71, which we know is Connect Oregon. Establish a lottery fund's expenditure limitation of $43,942 for debt service for the South Metro Commuter Rail Project. Increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation by $228 for debt service for debt payments on the short line project bonds. And increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation by $1 industrial rails for infrastructure project bonds. The 2005 legislature approved Senate Bill 71, which authorized the issuance of $100 million in lottery bonds to establish a multimodal transportation fund to finance loans and grants to public bodies and private entities for public transit, air, marine, and rail transportation projects. The first $25 million lottery bond sale was completed in August 2006. An interest payment of $613,707 will be due in April 2007. In 2002, lottery-backed bonds were issued to support startup and administrative costs for the South Metro Commuter Rail Project. The startup costs were for ODOT's work relating to planning and developing the project. ODOT needs an expenditure limitation of $43,706 to pay the current biennium's debt service. In 2001, the legislature authorized the sale of $2 million in lottery-backed bonds to finance improvements, restoration, upgrading, and preservation of systems, facilities, and equipment of short-line railroads. And in 2003, the legislature authorized the sale of $8 million in lottery-backed bonds to finance grants and loans to fund industrial spurs. ODOT requests an adjustment in the debt service limitation to reflect actual debt service costs and to accommodate a rounding adjustment in the industrial rail debt service limitation. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval of the request with a modification. I believe the Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request with a modification to increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation for debt service for the short line program by $228 and the lottery fund's expenditure limitation for debt service for the industrial rail spur infrastructure by $1. The Education Subcommittee concurred with a suggestion that DAS work with the Secretary of State to develop a policy that would allow payment of immaterial expenses without an appearance before the Emergency Board. Madam Chair, the Education Subcommittee recommends support.
Discussion? Item 43, Department of Transportation, Senator Gitlin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $10 million for increased fuel and material costs in the Highway Maintenance Program. The Department of Transportation is requesting an adjustment in its Highway Maintenance expenditure limitation to accommodate substantial increases in fuel and utility costs. ODOT's actual fuel costs are outpacing 2003-2005 actual costs by an average of 48% and energy costs by an average of 49%. In order to maintain current services, ODOT is requesting an expenditure limitation increase in the Highway Maintenance Program of $7.3 million to partially offset the increased costs in energy and fuel. The balance of the increased energy and fuel costs will be absorbed by ODOT. In addition, material costs increase occurring since the beginning of the biennium are causing projects to cost more, resulting in an in an inability to complete the number of projects planned for the biennium. ODOT is requesting an expenditure limitation increase of $2.7 million to partially offset the increase in materials costs. Your education subcommittee recommends approval of this request, and it would be a good idea to invest in petroleum companies.
Yeah, if I get the attention.
I prefer biofuels, Senator.
Further discussion? Objection? Item 44, Department of Transportation, Representative Cliff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $22 million for the Oregon Transportation Department's Highway Maintenance Program for slide and storm damage repair. You can tell we're getting close to lunch.
That's right.
The Department of Transportation Highway Maintenance Program provides resources that repair of highways, roads, trails that suffer serious damage from natural disasters. The 2005-07 legislatively adopted budget provided another fund's expenditure limitation of $5.1 million for emergency relief projects that do not qualify for FHWA reimbursement. This amount, $2.8 million, has been expended on events that do not qualify for that acronym reimbursement. Acronym noted ODOT in a memorandum dated July 31st, 2006, that $38 million has been appropriated for storm damage expenses for state and local roads. Over 300 projects from slide and storm damage from 2005 to 2006 storms have qualified for the federal emergency relief funds. The estimated total storm damage expense is $25.4 million, of which $22 million is expected to be reimbursed. Reimbursement for these expenses will enable ODOT to maintain the regularly scheduled paving for low-volume roads in the spring. Your Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Second. Objection. Item 45, Department of Transportation, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $2,813,067 for Highway Maintenance Program, increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $12,620,000 for Special Programs, and increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $231,561 for Central Services Programs for reimbursable expenses by other state and local agencies, with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will schedule the difference between the biennialized figures and the amount requested by the agency until an actual need is demonstrated. These amounts are $473,837 for fleet services in the maintenance program, $89,577 for the photo video unit of the central services program, and $95,308 for traffic signal services in special programs. The Department of Transportation provides a variety of services to other state agencies and local governments on a reimbursement basis. Expenditure limitation for external services was not accounted for when the non-limited support services and operations programs were eliminated. Those include work for facilities, fleet testing, and materials signs and quality assurances was transferred to the Highway Maintenance Program. The Photo Video Services Unit provides aerial photography, publications, graphic design, and general reprographic services for both ODOT and other state agencies, including the Department of Human Services and the Department of Justice. The Traffic Signal Services Unit includes traffic signal testing, inspection, and maintenance for both ODOT and other cities and counties. The Reimbursable Unit recovers costs when ODOT performs work on behalf of a third party, primarily for repairing department property which is damaged by others. Your Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the difference between the biennialized figures and the amount requested by ODOT until an actual need is demonstrated.
Discussion? Objection? Item 47, Board of Pharmacy, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on proposed administrative rule changes relating to pharmaceutical wholesale distributors and acknowledge receipt of a report on the need for a prescription drug monitoring program. Administrative rule changes. The Board of Pharmacy has drafted proposed administrative rule changes aimed at protecting the integrity of the drug distribution chain and strengthening wholesaler licensure requirements. The draft rule changes are the product of a work group consisting of agency staff, major manufacturers, national wholesalers, Oregon small businesses, and trade groups. The agency plans to initiate the formal rulemaking process soon with final board approval targeted for December 2006. proposed prescription drug monitoring program. In October 2005, the Emergency Board approved the Board of Pharmacy's request to spend the planning portion of a federal grant to develop a proposal for a prescription drug monitoring program and requested the agency provide a report describing why such a program is needed. The agency asserts that prescription drug abuse in Oregon is increasing. Although hard data is not available, the agency provided anecdotal information and contends that national trends apply to Oregon. According to the National Institute of Drug Abuse, the abuse of prescription drugs is a serious and growing public health problem. 23 states, including Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and California, have operational prescription drug monitoring programs, and other states have enacted enabling legislation. The proposed program calls for a mandated centralized database of controlled substance prescription data. The database will provide the data needed to identify potential abuse problems. The subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the reports.
Discussion? Objection? Item 48, Bureau of Labor and Industries, Senator Morse.
Co-chair, the Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on the prevailing wage rate unit, increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $43,635, and establish one limited duration wage and hour compliance specialist position. The budget report for the Bureau of Labor and Industries included a budget note directing BOLI to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on the workload and timeliness of the prevailing wage rate unit. The legislature was concerned that BOLI was unable to meet its performance targets for timely investigations of prevailing wage rate complaints. BOLI reported to JLAC on the actions taken to expedite the process, including increasing use of predeterminations, which provide for upfront analysis on whether proposed projects are subject to prevailing wage rate law requirements. BOLI reported on other methods to improve timeliness, including a new set of performance measures on prevailing wage determinations. JLAC recommends that the Emergency Board approve the request for an additional hour and wage and hour compliance specialist and the necessary expenditure limitation. And Co-Chair, your Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Representative Hanna?
I'm a no.
Oh, well, we're not there yet, okay. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just have a great deal of concern with the agency. I would much rather see them spend some time determining the validity of the prevailing wage complaints and the source of those complaints to maybe reduce the number of complaints. And with that thought, I will be a no on this item.
Any discussion? Senator Devlin and Senator Morse.
Very quickly, Madam Co-Chair. We had an extensive discussion of those issues, both on this item and the next item and related issues. And the two motions that you have are compromises that the committee worked out on some of those issues. So they came out of the committee unanimous.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Senator Devlin, for clarifying that. I was the one that raised this issue in the subcommittee. Principally out of the concern that we had a legislative adopted budget of $23,686 for legal expenses for BOLI. This is now ballooned to a request in excess of $400,000, and we've scaled it back now to $400,000 in this approval that you have before you on the next item. My concern is that the actions of the agency and the industry and the stakeholders have failed to produce a result that clarifies when prevailing wage is applied. And it's time to have a conclusion and a very bright line established with respect to how do we apply prevailing wage in this state. We have not done that. Now, has one side or the other been so recalcitrant that we can't come to a conclusion? I don't know. But what I do know, as a matter of public policy, we are spending some very serious money now in litigation and legal expenses that ought not to happen. Conclusion needs to be reached. And the message that I was trying to raise in the subcommittee is that we need conclusion. Now, to vote no on this wage and hour specialist predetermination, the industry supports that. And it helps advance, I think, the performance of the agency.
But with respect to the $400,000 that we're going to approve in this next item, I suspect we will approve it, and I'm suggesting that we do. We need to understand that this is an unresolved issue, and it needs some acceleration. And that's why we raised this issue. They do clearly need expenditure limitation to resolve the legal expenses. But these legal expenses ought to stop. And that's the point that I think is most important in this discussion. We need resolution of this issue, and it can't continue to languish. Thank you.
Are these legal expenses, are they prompted by the agency, or are they prompted because the agency is being sued? Maybe you could explain and clarify that for us a little bit.
Madam Speaker, it's a combination of those things, but in effect they're doing predeterminations at this point, and through that process they're having DOJ review those predeterminations, and so that's been a large bulk of the increase in the Attorney General costs. Some of the steps they have taken, if you did a straight line projection of their AG costs, they would need expenditure limitation of closer to $472,000, $73,000. But some of the steps they're taking give them a belief that that will actually come down, and that's why you will see on the next item a recommendation for an increase in the limitation in the amount of $400,000, but with instructions to the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule $100,000 at least of that amount. Until their actual costs would indicate they need those dollars.
Further discussion? Objection? Senator Representative Hamm, Representative Richardson, Representative Kraft. Motion carries. Item number 50, Department of Administrative Services.
49.
Oh, I'm sorry. Item 49, Bureau of Labor and Industries, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Education Subcommittee recommends increasing the other funds expenditure limitation by $400,000 for increased Attorney General costs for the prevailing wage rate unit. The Department of Administrative Services is requested to unschedule $100,000 of the limitation until actual costs are known. Increased workload of the PWR unit was an issue during the 05 budget hearing for BOLI. The budget report for the agency included two budget notes relating to the workload and timeliness of the PRW unit. One of them was to report back to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on workload and timeliness. The other one was to instruct BOLI to work with the prevailing wage rate advisory committee to evaluate possible efficiencies in public works projects. They did that, and the subcommittee stressed the need for BOLI to work diligently to resolve the ongoing issues surrounding prevailing wage and public relations partnership projects. Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objection? Objection? Okay. Motion carries. Item 50, Department of Administrative Services, Representative Martin.
Listen up, comrades. This is it, and it's short. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the request from the Department of Administrative Services be deferred to the next meeting of the Emergency Board. Issues affecting the Eugene State Office Building have surfaced and need to be addressed and resolved before a final plan can be approved. The Department should have the issues resolved before the next meeting of the Emergency Board, and your Subcommittee recommends that Agenda Item 50 be deferred to the next meeting.
Discussion on this issue. Objection. Motion carries.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
I do not wish to be shown as objecting to item number 39. Mistake on my part. Item number 39.
You would like to change your vote on 39?
Yes, please.
Senator Gordy requests unanimous consent to change her vote on item 39. Is there any objection? It doesn't change the outcome, correct? Mm-hmm. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Boone.
Can I just make a quick announcement? At 1:30, there's going to be a committee meeting hosted by Senator Winters, Senator Morse, and myself in hearing room A on developmentally disabled issues. If anybody's interested, you're more than welcome.
I believe it's hearing room B.
Hearing room B.
I'm sorry. B.
Any other business?
I'd just like to also announce that the Chinese Consul General from San Francisco will be attending the Joint Committee on Fujian Sister State, which will be in hearing room A at 1 o'clock. So it's going to be a really interesting meeting. We'll get the report on the Chinese. Our delegation went to China in June, and we have just a really important meeting that's coming up 1 o'clock today.
Further discussion? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just very quickly, colleagues, this evening at 7 p.m., Heppner will be beating Stanfield in 2A football.
Further discussion? No further business. We are adjourned.